Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On Comic-Con 2007. For more links and news we talk about in the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com.
R-E-A-D-A-B-O-O-K.
R-E-A-D-B-O-O-K.
Wait, no.
Hey, Hello, my geeklings.
When do you get a new tooth, by the way?
It's going to be another 5 months.
Another 5 months?
I got 2 months for the bone graft to heal, and then I've got it. Then they're going to put the implant in, and that's going to take 3 months to heal, and then they can put the tooth on it.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
I got 2 months for the bone graft.
You know, look, if my bones would just heal faster, you know, if I was like Wolverine, they could do it in like 5 minutes.
Drink your milk.
I do drink my milk.
Well, welcome, everybody, to a long-awaited Geeks On.
A very special episode of Geeks On.
Geeks On returns, and this time, it's personal.
We have a Comic-Con episode.
Yes, we have a Comic-Con episode where we'll recap what we saw and experienced at Comic-Con. It's not a full... I don't know. It's not full coverage. There's plenty of sites where you can get full coverage, but it's what our what we saw.
Did you guys all see the R2KT wandering around?
No.
It was a pink R2U.
Oh yeah, I did. I did see that,
and it was awesome.
Wow.
It was near all those Darth Vader helmets that I think they were auctioning off the Darth Vader with the artwork on it.
Before that, we're going to go into introductions for all of us, since it's been quite a long time since we put out an episode.
Hi, my name's Peter. I am a geek. I am a writer and a director here in Los Angeles.
Hi, my name is Matt King. I am an actor here in Los Angeles, and I too am a geek.
Oh, hi, I'm Lisa. I'm an editor in Los Angeles, and I'm a big fat geek.
And she's smoking hot.
My name is Don. I am a video game professional here in Los Angeles, and I too am a geek.
And my name is Aaron Hendricks, and I'm a graphic designer and filmmaker here in Los Angeles, and I'm a geek.
There's a long pause all the time whenever you do that, Aaron.
That's because my profession changes all the time.
I understand that.
I think you're actually in a crisis of life, and you've decided to...
That is actually it. I'm trying to drop one of those.
He's like, I don't want to be a graphic. I don't want to say these words anymore.
Exactly.
That explains the small red sports car I saw you looking at the other day.
Yeah.
The young 20-year-old.
With the blonde in it. Yeah.
Yeah. I was curious about that.
How was your guys' geek 2 weeks?
I've been in wedding land. I got nothing geek.
Nothing geek?
1 week. This is my last show as a single geek.
Congratulations.
My geek week has consisted of a lot of playing of Resident Evil 4 on the Wii, which is awesome.
Okay, now explain. Is this different? How different is it from the other platforms?
It's the same, except the control is slightly different. And I think it's better, even though Aaron will disagree with me, because he was traumatized by his first time playing it. Because there is a learning curve. It does. Okay.
The controls are, I think, very weird. I haven't gotten used to it yet.
They stop being weird. You really have to look around with one. You don't have, like, a head look ever. You just have to walk and look, which is actually scarier.
And you can't strafe.
Turn a corner, you have to, like, turn the corner in order to...
Why can't you strafe?
Well, because that's the design of it, but that makes it twice as scary, because when you go around a corner, you can't peek around the corner to make sure there's
Exactly.
But it's sure absurd, no, because you,
absurd.
You turn a corner and there's a dude standing there.
Actually, I've got to tell you...
I'm being scared.
I hear what you're saying, but having played the game, my initial reaction was what your reaction is, but yet it makes the game so much scarier and so much more intense, and I'm totally with Lisa, having played the whole game.
Because it takes away your peripheral vision.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is awesome.
It's a false, like, game gimmick.
Aside from that, is it easier to aim?
Yes.
Okay, you know, because
I was so enraged when I sat down to play it on the PS2, and I kept shooting the ceiling over and over and over and over.
Yeah, it's much easier, because, you know, you're just directly pointing with the Wii, just like a light gun game. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh,
and
oh.
You would like it.
Oh.
So you move with one hand and you aim with the other hand.
Oh, I won't.
Which you get really used to quickly, even though Aaron didn't pass the hump yet. But once you're past it, I'm
a Aaron,
one
can I come
it.
Play on your Wii?
Yeah.
Aaron has a really big hump over these things, though.
Don wants to play with your Wii.
I don't know. I'll stick with it. I'll stick with it.
I'll even sit with you in your little red sports car.
Because it is
I haven't played that many video games, actually, because I've been trying to stay away and work on my stuff I need to be doing.
I am getting out my first Nintendo DS game in the next couple days. Knock on
wood. Badass.
Yay.
And that's eating up most of my time. That and my car got broken into, so I've been dealing with the most ungeekly world of insurance and car rentals.
I downloaded The Shivering Isles.
Oh, cool.
And,
you did?
I have played it. It is pretty wild, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, because basically, you know, for those of you who do not know, The Shivering Isles is actually the Daedric world of Shi'agorath, who is the god of madness. So the whole world is split into mania and dementia right down the middle. So you go to one side and it's all dark and creepy. You go to the other side and it's all bright and happy. And yet both sides, everyone you talk to in the whole world is totally insane.
Huh.
Everyone is crazy. Hmm. You
like,
know.
Cool. Happy-go-lucky crazy or like, I got an axe crazy?
They are both of them, actually. Some of them are very happy-go-lucky. Some of them are like, you know, ready to kill everybody.
Must make shopping very difficult.
Does it integrate into the world okay? I mean, do you feel like you're just playing a different game entirely? Or
No. It's just like the other game. I mean, you've gone into Daedric worlds before and seen what they're like. This is just a different one than one that you're used to.
Oh, okay.
And you can
come out if you want to.
You go through a gate and you can go back and forth between the two. You can keep playing the regular game. You can play this one only, and you know. But it's very this one's dark because you're asked to do some dark shit over there.
Huh. Cool. Yeah.
Like, there's this one part right now where basically there's this crazy lady that is sure that people are trying to kill her. So she wants you to find out who's trying to kill her,
mm-hmm.
and she sends her grand torturer with you, and you have to walk around and choose people that you want to torture to find out if they're the people.
Man.
God.
Yeah, I haven't been able to do that yet. I've restarted
the game so many times at this point for various reasons, but I've never been able to bring myself to do the evil quests. You know, like join the Murderers Guild, that sort of thing. I didn't even realize that, you know, all these people were telling me how to join the Murderers Guild until, like, this most recent playthrough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I've discovered the
it's Assassin's
archery,
Guild, Don. Murderers is not
a derogatory term.
they're murderers.
Because it shows you in the stats if you've had any murders. Like, it's different than a kill. It's called a murder. And I saw once, you know, that there was one murder, and so I went back and...
You demurdered yourself? Wow.
You're like me, aren't you? You never finished the dark side path on Knights of the Old Republic.
And Aaron and I don't even steal in Oblivion, which is kind of sad.
Like, really?
Everybody steals.
Yeah, I don't steal.
I don't steal at all.
Goody goodies.
Red means bad.
Not only that, but I park in every handicapped spot in Oblivion.
Did you guys hear that there's 12 different endings in Mass Effect?
God, really?
I haven't even heard about Mass Effect.
That's like the most anticipated Xbox 360 game this year, in my opinion.
Yeah, Virtua Fighter 5.
Well, being that my Xbox 360 has had to go back another two times, I haven't had it.
Oh my God,
this is a good transition into stories because one of my stories covers that.
All right, let's do some geek news.
Well, it should. Oh, and by the way, please, everyone, cross their fingers out there because I am up for the final role in the new Tekken movie as the lead Jin. So
Jin. Really?
Yeah, and they had to I had to go put together a fight reel and everything like that so that I could audition the movie.
Did you study the game and do the fight moves
from
the game?
I actually did, yeah.
Okay, you are doing a demonstration after this. We are going into the living room. We're going to move the coffee table.
Put your reel on. Put the fight reel on YouTube. All right.
Okay. I can do that.
We'll link to it.
I'll find it.
Excellent. Oh, I'm so excited.
All right. Let's cue the music.
All right.
All right, so.
I thought you were telling me to cue it.
Yeah, could you do some music for us, Lisa? No, please. Would you,
Whoop, whoop.
All right. So, along the lines of your Xbox failing, one of my stories is that cool electronic gear may be emitting too much heat. Game consoles, digital video recorders, cable boxes, and other gadgets in living rooms are throwing off a tremendous amount of heat as manufacturers seem to cram more circuitry into smaller spaces.
Is this the one? I think I read this article. It said the PS3 is putting out 6 times more energy and heat than it did than the old version.
You know, it might have said that somewhere in here. I didn't underline that section to talk about. But basically, what we are seeing though is rising room temperatures, malfunctioning gadgets, and even warped wooden peeling paint because people are taking all these electronic devices and shoving them into small cabinets.
exactly what I'm doing, yes.
And so what some experts believe that the overheating is a contribution to the wave of Xbox 360 malfunctions the last month prompted by Microsoft.
Oh, please.
Well, of course.
But the rest of our equipment's not failing. So it's still a Microsoft problem.
It is. But they believe it's that, and they did say it was contributing, not causing.
Oh, okay.
So that's the word. They also think that what's causing it is that Microsoft switched to a non-lead type of solder
mm-hmm.
Because
children were chewing on their Xboxes.
Well, to comply with EU standards.
I like my explanation better.
And that may be what's causing some of the problems. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know those kids doing
it. I'm just shocked that Microsoft put out a product that failed this horribly.
Three times.
Once.
Three times.
You're not paying, though.
Jaquili failed three times, too.
Wow.
His unit.
Mine was red.
If you get a new one... If
well, I heard about that.
I paid so much money for that Xbox 360 Elite that I have. Got back home, plugged it in, and realized I just paid an awful lot of money for a larger hard drive that I'll probably never use. But it's black, so that's cool.
You'll use it because I've had to delete several things from mine.
Me
really?
Too.
Oh, yeah.
Demos, man.
Demos are...
That's too big. Stack up, don't they?
And you can download movies, HD movies.
Yeah, and HD movies, 4 gigs.
Yeah, but I don't have an HD TV, which caused a problem when I picked up Dead Rising a couple weeks ago.
Because you can't read shit.
I can't play that freaking game. And it looks like so much fun.
Battle for Middle Earth, I can't see a thing.
You know, I gotta ask.
Get a damn TV. Yeah. 2000. I sent you the link.
I know. I'm on the edge. The precipice.
It's a lot of money.
My TV on Amazon is only $2,000 now.
Really?
Well,
why don't you have a PS3? Because, I mean, you know, if it's only $2,000, PS3 is nowhere near $2,000. I mean, if it's just a drop in the bucket, go get one.
Because I don't want one, but Lisa wants an HD television.
I do. I covet yours.
$2,000, huh?
The reason why I have friends is because I have something they don't have.
I invite myself over to watch the 300 HD.
I want an HD TV, too. I also want to be able to afford an HD TV.
All right, I booked Jen. I'm buying your TV.
Okay.
Sweet.
Thank you.
I'll do it.
I have no thing to make me do it, but I'm going to do it. It's like inevitable any minute now.
All right, hit a news story, Lisa.
Oh, news. Oh, well, in continuing on the path of Xbox 360.
Excellent.
There was some really great Halo 3 news, which I'm sure you guys all heard about, how there's going to be online 4-person co-op, which was huge because before that they were like, I don't know if we're going to be able to do co-op.
That will
it's
actually
really
get
hard.
Me to buy the game.
Yeah, that's
they're like, I don't even know if we'll be able to do 2-player co-op.
Yeah, they were...
Well, it was like, a month ago that there was leaked that there was 4-player co-op. And that was a big rumor. And then the rumor was, it wasn't a rumor. Somebody on their staff said, we're having difficulties doing online co-op because our maps are just so huge. Which made me think, this game's getting just worse and worse and worse. I mean, it just sounds like Halo 2 with some extra, you know, rooms.
But at the same time, they're not saying anything really negative because they're like, well, our game is so awesome and so huge, we're having trouble.
Yeah,
but
everyone says
they
that.
They weren't really. I feel like that was...
You think that was a
story.
Okay, so then they came out again and confirmed the 4-player online.
Yes, now it is confirmed. It won't be 4 Master Chiefs. It's going to be 1 Master Chief, 1 Arbiter, and then 2 Elites. And it seems like the story is really going to concern Master Chief and the Arbiter because even if you're playing single player, apparently the Arbiter is going to be
your
sort
buddy.
Of an NPC. Yeah, exactly.
So it sounds like you should not play this by yourself.
No, but here's one interesting thing, just the latest thing that came out, is that because if you have 4 people, you have 4 times the firepower. It's going to kind of make it too easy. So they're saying that, I can read you exactly what they said. For the first and most important step for players is to forget that easy and normal even exist. If you have any chutzpah at all, you might as well forget heroic while you're at it. So they're basically saying if you want to play the 4-person co-op, you have to play it on heroic.
So they don't have it automatically scale per... That's weird.
There's no real excuse for that. I mean, the game isn't out yet. Game balance can still be done.
Yes, but it's coming out awfully soon, and they just announced this about the 4-player, and I feel like it's got to be done by now in order for it to come out when it's coming out.
That scares me a bit. That means they're Russian. Rushing. Apologies to our Russian listeners.
No, they also say we've included a whole layer of ways to make co-op more challenging, so... Hopefully they did really think about it and build it in.
Puzzles.
Well, the multiplayer, I mean, they released the multiplayer beta months ago. and it ran very well. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they have a busted ass game.
They have an incredibly solid engine to be working from.
Right.
You know, I'm doubting the Halo 3 game is going to be working off of that drastically different an engine
than Halo 2.
Yeah.
And the fact that they didn't have it playable at E3 is a little.
That is a little bizarre. Concerning. But yeah. They may just be like, listen, there's no reason for us to do any of that. We had to put out a beta.
They don't have to risk anything. People are going to give it a shot.
True. And just that, it also, in the news, it said it hit over 1 million pre-orders. So it's already a bestseller, and it's 2 months away.
My God, it's the Harry Potter of video games.
It is.
And
they're going to have this huge cross-promotion thing. Like, you're going to be able to get Halo Whoppers and little glasses that say Halo on them at Burger King.
You can get Halo Whoppers? I'm definitely buying Halo 3.
Halo?
Okay.
Did you guys see the... I sent a link around to each of you. One of them was this great link of these guys set this... lion free, when, you know, that they had raised from a kitten. So they're standing here, and they go to reunite with the lion, and the lion looks over and sees them, right? And it starts running right towards them, just going like, and I'm waiting for them to rip their heads off, and it jumps right on them, puts its paws around them, gives them a hug, and starts licking their faces. Okay. Now, I bring up the second one. The second one was this really cool, and I'll link to that. It's a hysterical clip.
Okay.
But the second one was really interesting because it's apparently, supposedly, this UFO footage from Haiti.
Yeah.
Okay, or Cuba.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Haiti.
Haiti.
Now, this, it actually looks remarkably good. If it's digital, which it probably
is. Yeah, there's a whole bunch. The guy did it to a whole bunch of cities.
Oh, did he? Okay. It looks great. Okay. But it's really interesting because the reason I bring it up, down below the comments, everyone thinks that it's a Halo campaign,
like a viral
marketing campaign,
alternate reality game.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's really good. I will link to both of these on the site. But
even though there's not a ship in there that looks Halo-ish,
no.
Well, you know,
somebody else said when Crisis. They thought it was a Crisis viral.
Crisis, yeah. That could be because it does kind of look Crisis-y, but. I don't know.
All right. In other news, the iPhone is vulnerable to hackers.
Yeah, that's putting it mildly.
A team of computer security consultants say they have found a flaw in Apple's popular new iPhone that allows them to take control of the device completely. The researchers working for Independent Security Evaluators, a company that tests its clients' computer security by hacking it, said that they could take control of the iPhones through a Wi-Fi connection or by tricking users into going to a website that contains malicious code.
Now, I also read that article. They also said that the iPhone's not necessarily any more vulnerable than any other phone.
Right.
It's just that phones are vulnerable. This is just the way they are. So it's not like the iPhone has a flaw that makes it worse off than any
others. It is on Wi-Fi, which is a greater vulnerability.
But who's hacking? I mean, who's going to have the time to hack
a
phone?
Ask Paris Hilton. Ask Paris Hilton that question.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they just got her phone.
No. So did they?
I thought they hacked their phone for the videos.
Her phone directory, her phone videos and her phone pictures have been stolen on multiple occasions. It's not just one story. It's like three or four different things.
I thought she kept leaving her phone and everyone kept picking it up and she had nude photos of herself on it.
Probably that too. Once or twice,
that's
but.
Very plausible.
Oops, I left my phone.
Oh, well.
Oops, yeah, well, I'm the hackers have been all over iPhone, adding all sorts of functionality. I think they've gotten it to work on other network systems in Europe. They've gotten NES games now
Did you hear about the Chinese iPhones?
Yeah, I heard about that, too.
They're faking it. It has nothing to do with iPhone, but they're just like, well, that's a great idea. We'll make the same thing.
And
they improved it a great deal. It can run software that the iPhone can't, access things the iPhone can't. It's like the iPhone without all of Macintosh's bullshit. No, I don't want to interact with anything else.
Yeah, but you know, they also have the advantage of working cheaper to do stuff like that, you know? So.
But it doesn't have any of the iPhone software on it, right? It doesn't have any Apple software on it?
I didn't read that far in the article. I don't know.
Okay. Because, I mean, that's part of the reason why that I've... That, in fact, I would say that's one of the biggest reasons why the iPhone is cool, because it works so well on that software side.
Well, it said it could run anything the iPhone can plus more. Oh. They just didn't say what else. I have no idea what comes with it.
Interesting.
Well, I read a little bit. They said that what they're literally doing is they're literally opening up the iPhone and copying the circuits, going down and figuring out every circuit, everything, you know, just what's it called when you do that?
Copyright? What copyright?
Yeah, no, seriously.
Retrofitting.
Yeah.
Backward
engineering.
Backward engineering.
I have a... This is an article that'll be more interesting when you go to see it. Because I'm picking it not because I necessarily agree with everything on their list, but because their entries are really kind of amusing. And this is from Gamer Help, the list of enemies and allies of gamers. On the enemies list are some very obvious people, such as Jack Thompson and Fox News and Joseph Lieberman. And then some unexpected people like Roger Ebert, who apparently has been...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not art.
It's not art. Oh, that makes me so infuriated.
That guy's an ass.
And,
he plays a lot, so he knows.
Yeah, exactly.
Atari and EA also both made the enemies of video game lists.
Okay.
On Why the allies EA? List... EA for basically, it was more of an attack on EA Sports and EA for burning out talent in the industry by abusing people they hire.
Oh, you mean the EA Widows stuff?
Yeah. I mean, they brought in... EA put out some wonderful games for a while because they basically threw hundreds of artists at the games, forced them to work 100-hour work weeks, and destroyed some prime talent that could have been wonderful for the industry, and just made them go, like, I never want to look at another video game again.
Yeah, these guys are now working on the movies, and they're like, oh, great, I only get to work a 70-hour work week? That's fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. Beautiful. I mean, you know... Whatever. It's the movie industry, the game industry, it's all the same.
And Atari, just for taking like one of, you know, the first leading cutting edge names in the industry and then
turning it to crap.
Yeah, and then turning it to crap. I mean, it's not even Atari anymore. It's a French company that happened to buy the name and went, oh, people recognize that name more than ours. Let's switch.
There's not going to be a Driver 4.
That's sad.
Rads.
As an owner of an Atari t-shirt, that makes me sad.
On the allies list are a couple surprising names. You have, Drew Carey, who was actually sort of a video game advocate before it was chic. Made references to it on his show and all that stuff. George Lucas, Robin Williams, Steve Ballmer and Bill Gates. The country of Japan made the list.
And Korea.
So good stuff, good stuff. And very interesting little snarky articles about each of them.
Korea kills off too many of the video gamers in its country. I think Japan's much more of a supporter.
Yeah, and they won't support any like Sony stuff or anything because it's all Japanese products.
Exactly.
They're not going to do that.
Hit it, Aaron.
All right, a couple of board game news. Two games that are on the shelf that I finally got my copies of. If Wishes Were Fishes, which is a Rio Grande game, is now on shelves. And Space Dealer, which is a German game. Space Dealer is interesting because it's a real-time board game. There's no turns. You do everything with sand timers. So all your moves are counted with sand timers, and then you, in order to get to the next move, you have to flip your sand. So if you want to travel to a new planet, you flip the sand timer and put it on your ship engine, and when it's done, you then move your ship over there. So the whole game is exactly 30 minutes. It comes with a little a CD of music. That's 30 minutes, and the game is over at the end of 30 minutes, and then you count up who wins.
That's an awesome idea.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, I want to try it.
Yeah, so anyway, I haven't read the rules yet, but so it just came.
I thought you said sand timers, though, like sanity check and
no,
D&D,
not
though.
sand timers.
The end of 30 minutes, we all go
the other
back!
Thing. The other thing is that Battle Lore expansions are on the shelves, like the Dwarven Armies and the Goblin Skirmisher Armies. I picked up one of them, but here's the deal. There's some misprints in both of them. The Dwarven Army just has one of the backs of the cards is misprinted, has a wrong side to it, but it doesn't really matter because it's a reference card. But the Goblin Skirmishers, they have these flags which identify like what type of unit they are, and they're all wrong. So I would hold off for a little while until they fix those things, or go to the Days of Wonder website and check out to see if you can get replacement flags yet for free before you buy them, because it sounds like it's kind of a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's all on the Days of Wonder website. The miniatures are very cool. Like my the Dwarven Army is cool. They have little bagpipers on there that when they start playing the bagpipes, everyone runs in fear. And spear carriers and giant
very
axe.
Very true life faction then.
Two-handed axe guys and stuff. So anyway, it's pretty cool.
Two quick stories. The YouTube debates have happened for the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And I highly recommend going and looking at them because it's changing the face of politics in the sense that...
Do you think so?
I absolutely think so, because they did not know what questions were going to be asked of them.
That's true.
But
I'm not going to argue that point, but
them.
Their responses were still incredibly canned and prefabricated. That's a hard word.
You know, I think so. I think that was true under some circumstances, but I do think other people... didn't come across that way. I thought Barack Obama was incredibly articulate and came off very well.
I felt a lot of them
and
did that.
Barack Obama came across as Barack Obama. He always comes across that way,
which is good.
I think though the one thing that is good. I mean, CNN picked the damn questions, so they could have written the damn things. I mean, they got 10 million of them.
Yeah.
So,
well, we want to ask you about the Iraq debate. Go find someone's question about
the
Iraq.
So, but here is the thing that I felt that was a little more interesting is that instead of having, you know, some reporter from CNN asking somebody about gay rights, mm-hmm. they had two gay people asking. And it kind of changed the tone of the question a little bit.
I
mean, even though it was the exact same question, it felt like it was maybe harder for them to wiggle out of not answering.
Oh, I definitely think... I mean, I'm contradicting myself a little bit here. Mm-hmm. Well, no, I guess I'm not. But a Southern preacher was asking a question of John Edwards on his YouTube question, saying, you know, I'm really tired of people using religion to justify their hatreds. You have done that in the past. Why do you feel that's okay when applying it to the groups that you don't like? And John Edwards answered the question, supposedly. Mm-hmm. And then the moderator turns to and says, oh, by the way, we have the man who asked that question in the audience. Preacher, do you feel that he answered your question? No. Not at all. Not really. And it was true. And I would like to see people be able to call these politicians on those bullshit answers.
Yeah, that's what I felt.
Because we'd be there all night.
Well, I felt like a lot of them did that shift. You
I
know?
Completely disagree. If people were able to call politicians on bullshit answers, then their faces, they would have to answer correctly the first time.
That's the reason why politicians get elected, because they're so good at not answering the questions.
Yeah. Because no one ever asks follow-up questions.
Maybe.
That is the reason why they can get away with that. If someone could sit there in the audience and go, you did not answer my question. Answer my question, you bullshit politician. Then you can guarantee they're going to start answering questions.
Well, this was something that they made a real... They made a real effort to do, which was to make sure people actually answered the questions they were asked and not to slip and slide. You know, throughout the whole debate, this was an effort that they made. Now, it was actually, I think, more successful than it would normally have been in that sense. But the other thing that's important about this is that these are all now going up onto YouTube.
That's the best thing.
And what they're saying is going to remain out there on the internet so that there is some sort of accountability. You know, it's not like they can say something over here and, you know,
there's more and more accountability every day anyway, because everything's on the internet
anyway. But I just love the fact that, you know, it's harder for people to go over and meet in front of a bunch of people. It's televised.
If they saw, they'll forget in a week.
They'll forget in a week, and it's gone. Yeah. You know, it's like if you wanted to go back and see that debate and see what they said, you know, you it would be very hard for you to get a hold of it. But
one of the things I love about, like, the Daily Show, this Colbert Report, a lot of those things, is half the show is saying, what did you say today? Now let's go and see what you said before.
Right. I mean, the thing that I really liked about the YouTube debates were two things. One, that they had such a wide field, so that there were Democrats who have absolutely no chance up there. They're not going to get elected. They're not going to get the party nomination.
True.
So they were just spouting off. and absolutely ripping at other people.
I'm feeling very pro-Krucinich after these debates.
Oh, my God. It was ridiculous.
Very pro-Krucinich.
And the other thing was that you could see very visibly when people were doing politicking. I think John Edwards and Hillary Clinton were
both
the biggest culprits.
Yeah, they were the worst.
And they kept
because they have the most to lose.
Well, they kept on doing things like, you know, they'd get a question and they'd be like, first, I'd like to thank Bobby, Ricky, Jimmy, and Joe for their question. And it was such a planned political thing that it became so visible. And that's why I really liked Barack Obama outside of it.
I liked Biden too. I thought he was really interesting.
Yeah. Biden's exactly what I was talking about. He's one of the ones who's like, he has no chance, so he's just gonna like fire bombs over other people's chips.
Biden answered every question, Kucinich answered every question. Obama was pretty close. Pretty close to answers.
I think we're going to see that with Ron Paul as a candidate on the Republican side, and he's the only one who's
Well, that's
like,
what I'm curious about, because for a little while there, the Republicans are trying to cancel their YouTube debate.
Were they?
Yeah. Which is interesting.
Yeah, there was right after the Democrat one, they were like, we don't want to do this. We don't want to do this.
Hell no.
It says so much for these candidates to be willing to do this.
Oh, yeah.
Just the opposite for the Republicans.
Well, I cannot wait to see the Republican debates. I mean, I'm very excited to see, you know, different points of view.
Woo-hoo.
And, you know, I mean,
crazy, crazy. Right.
Lisa, you got another one?
I do have another one. Okay, you guys should start saving your pennies so you can all stay at the Galactic Space Hotel that opens in 2000.
Right on!
I read this. It was like when the New York Times picked it up. I was like, this cannot be real. And it is real.
If the space station's rocking, don't come a knocking.
Oh, sorry. It is a $3 billion space hotel. And guess how much it costs for a three-night stay?
Oh, God, how much?
$3,000.
No, $300,000.
Oh, wait, is it in outer space?
$400,000.
Yes, it is actually in outer space.
Oh.
I can tell you.
$600,000.
Guests would see the sunrise 15 times a day and use Velcro suits to crawl around their pod.
Now, this hasn't been made, right? They're taking they're pre-registering. I mean, obviously this doesn't exist.
They've got the capital. They are planning to make it.
So I'm going to say it's probably $150,000 a night, so $450,000.
No, at this point, the amount of money investment in there, I'm guessing no less than $800,000.
$1 million a night.
It's got to be over $2 million. I bet.
All right, you guys are all real close. It's $4 million. The low price of
$4 million. Wow!
Ding 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 ding.
And
thank you, Bob.
Listen to this. They've already calculated that there are 40,000 people in the world who can afford to stay there.
Now let's just say
it makes sense.
Our first guest was $3,000 a night.
Can you imagine the raffle for a weekend there?
I thought they were going to pack a whole bunch of people in there. Not four.
That many rooms. They have to send each room up in a rocket.
Right.
I think they can only take like three people at a time up there.
I would totally go.
I would completely go. It is actually smart because I think there's a lot of people who would do it, not just us.
Well, at least 40,000.
Yeah.
Or let's say 20,000 out of the 40,000.
So you say half of the people who could afford it would do it?
I'd say yeah.
Most of those people are 80 and over.
Yeah, so what do they have to lose?
If we were to sell raffle tickets, right, for $500 a ticket, how many tickets would we need to sell in order to turn a profit raffling off one weekend there? My God. We could do this. We'll do a worldwide raffle.
160,000, I think.
Math geek.
I don't know, somewhere around there.
Oh yeah, here it's.
Come on, anyway. Matt, stand up for the Asian race.
12.
Five.
here it says the rocket can carry 6 guests at a time to the place.
Wow, expensive trip.
I can't wait until we have a space elevator.
I think your idea is great, Don, because you could have the Molly Brown in space. Like, it's all these rich people who actually paid to get there, and there's one guy.
Oh,
like,
that would rock.
Oh, my God, look, it's the sun again. Look, it's coming up. Oh, my God, is that China? Oh, I can totally see the Great Wall.
Yeah, I could be wrong.
Sounds like a billionaire.
Did you say 8,000? Is that it?
Huh?
8,000 tickets at $500 a piece, is that right?
160,000 tickets at $20 a piece, right? To get $4 million, or
at $500 a piece.
$500.
Yeah. I mean, $500.
So it would be. I think it's 8,000. I'm not positive.
No. Well, this is not good radio. Let's move on.
All right. So,
any other news? Oh, you do.
Yeah, I got a last little thing. So there's a Second Life sex machine lawsuit.
I didn't know that you could do that on Second Life.
Kevin Alderman didn't bring sex to Second Life. He just made it better. The 46-year-old entrepreneur recognized 4 years ago that people would pay to equip their online selves, which start out with the smooth anatomy of a Barbie or Ken doll, with realistic genitalia and even more to add some sexy moves. Business at Eros LLC has been brisk. One of his creations, the Sex Gen Platinum, where are they coming up with these names, has gotten so popular that he's now had to hire lawyers to track down the flesh and blood person behind the online identity or avatar that he says illegally copied and sold it. The $45 Sex Gen animates amorous avatars in erotic positions.
So it's a real thing that you set near your computer, probably via USB or something.
No, this is software code written in the scripting language of Second Life. Oh.
It's just real. On the screen. You just watch it.
Well, I thought it was something they could do on Second Life that would send a message
it's
to
software
some
code.
Yeah, he said suit, so we all imagined a little suit that you had to wear.
He meant lawsuit.
No. Lawsuit.
I meant, I was thinking some type of
no.
I'm sort of let down now.
You take this code,
lame.
You implant it into...
But the suit was cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't mean a suit. I'm talking about some type of, like, doll that sits to your computer via USB.
That'll be next.
And then wiggles around.
They already have those, but I'm sure it's next.
But one that, like, if you type in, like,
wave... The Microsoft Sucks 2000.
Wave in Second Life, then the doll goes, waves his hand, and then,
Too much thought.
I'm like, come on, people.
Yeah. No, basically, you introduce the software code into various furniture pieces, and it will animate your avatar when that avatar interacts with that piece of furniture.
Okay.
Avatars click on the object.
So you do furniture?
No.
Yeah,
you can do somebody else on your furniture.
But you can make your... Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Alderman filed a civil lawsuit in U.S. District Court in Tampa, Florida. What is it with you Florida people, Peter? Last month, alleging an avatar named Volkov Katnyo broke the program's RAM copy production and sold unauthorized copies. Alderman, who runs his business from his home in a Tampa suburb, allows users to transfer his products but prohibits copying. We confronted him about it, and his basic response was, what are you going to do, sue me? I guess the mentality is that because you're an avatar that you're untouchable. The purpose of this suit is not only to protect our income and our product, but also so, yes, that you can be prosecuted and brought to justice. So avatars can be equipped with flowing gowns and tiny tattoos, and users with programming and Photoshop skills can reshape themselves into a virtual Greta Garbo or just about any shape imaginable. With little cash, users can also have people like Alderman transform their avatars for them. At Alderman Second Life Shop, shoppers can try out a dragon bed powered by one of his Sex Gen engine. Along with programmers and designers, he employs a sales staff who hang around the shop like real salespeople to pitch the perfect sex toys in Second
Life. This is crazy. This Second Life thing is so... I need to get on and just check it out because I haven't actually...
You need to get on to get off?
Suddenly he's interested in it after this article.
Well, I mean, it's just funny, so bizarre that all these things can happen. It's just like... It's out of control.
You know, Warren Ellis had a book signing in Second Life.
That's crazy.
How do you have a book signing in Second Life?
They were giving away, like, excerpts of the book, like little digital...
Oh, God.
And you get a little digital signature.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Yeah, like he was even there.
Yeah, I'm Warren Ellis. It's Ellis, right? Yeah, I'm him. Let's see. The Nation has a report this week on Operation Stand Up, an evangelical military entertainment group that is planning to send care packages, including Left Behind Eternal Forces, to American troops fighting in Iraq. For those of you who have forgotten Left Behind, the PC video game, where...
I remember this.
This is a game which raised the ire of many activist groups for its promotion of killing and converting non-Christians. And it's going to be sent as part of a freedom packet that will also include pocket-sized Gideon Bibles, a Christian extreme sports DVD, and the proselytizing book More Than a Carpenter.
What's Christian extreme sports?
I was wondering exactly.
Bible beating.
Nothing but football with Hail Marys. Hail Marys. Hail Marys.
That's so.
Bible beating 5 extreme.
It's not really clear how much support the Pentagon has for this. The group, however, does have backing of celebrities, including Stephen Baldwin, Evander Holyfield.
Stephen Baldwin's an evangelist now?
Apparently.
Stephen Baldwin's a celebrity?
And according to sources close to the group, God. So,
Last time we checked in with Stephen Baldwin, he was like trying to put Bing cherries into a martini glass with his butt. I mean, now he's an evangelist.
What movie were you watching?
Yeah.
I think that was in Biodome or that bad Pauly Shore movie.
Missed that one.
Yeah.
Shame.
Sorry.
Shame.
And then that didn't.
Any other news stories?
Yeah, I got one that's kind of interesting.
All right, hurry it up.
Okay, so data mining. We all know what that is. Well, there's a guy named Rodney Monroe, chief of Redmond, Virginia Police Service, who just won the 2007 Business Intelligence Award for Excellence from Gartner, which is a leading technology research firm, because he basically brought data mining to his police force. When he took over 2 years ago, his department was drowning in crime. Mm-hmm. They had lots of problems. So he got some programs, and he started to analyze some of the issues they had about when things were popping up and where they were popping up. And basically, he was able to connect the dots, and he's able to realize that crimes were happening after paydays. They were happening in certain necks of the areas of the woods. Mm-hmm. So he just started putting more police at those times of the month, mm-hmm. in these areas. Well, crime has dropped 21% from 2005 to 2006 and another 19% in 2007. So it's really interesting.
So get a damn database.
Yeah, you know, get a program to mine your data and figure out where your crime's happening so you can address it before it happens. It's really kind of smart.
Seems so obvious.
Now, this is a type of data mining I don't have any problem with someone doing. You know, it's not personal.
It's data mining, like public.
Statistical analysis.
Yeah. And it's just smart. Now, here's something that was in the article, though, that kind of freaked me out. The cutting-edge research is going into developing ways of transcribing voice to text and tagging videos to allow them to be searchable within a database along with other evidence. So,
but that's police video.
Well, but that's police video, but it could also be, you know, if you're listening to if you're tapping someone's phones, you know, it could be all sorts of things. I mean, this is something that could actually be quite scary. I mean, it's basically what we just saw in Born. If anyone has seen the most recent
Bourne movie.
Bourne movie, there's a part where basically, you know, it shows the NSA able to just kind of like pick one word out of like 13 trillion
conversations
on cell phones.
Yeah.
That's a little scary. But
yeah, well, but the scary part is they shouldn't be listening to the damn phone.
That's true.
All right. Cool. Let's hit it.
All right, so this week we're going to download everything we know about our experience at Comic-Con 2007.
Yay!
Now, most of us here, everyone but Don actually made it to Comic-Con.
Nice, Don. No, Don actually got shafted.
Don had to work.
I went
to it. It was such a bad thing.
How did you guys like Comic-Con this year? Let's just start with the broad Comic-Con experience before getting into details.
I thought it was great, but I spent so little time on the floor this last time talking to people. I was just going basically from meeting to meeting, from, you know, conference room to conference room, and I had just a ball.
Right.
So
I thought there's too many people this year. I mean, when we went on Friday, it was manageable, but on Saturday when it was sold out, I just thought it was too much. They need to figure out either how to lower the amount of people getting in just by a little bit, or they need to get a bigger place. I mean, it was frustrating.
I was under the impression that they were moving to the L.A. Convention Center, which is a larger space.
Not true. Right now, the rumor is, according to Comic-Con, that they will be moving to the Las Vegas Convention Center.
Oh, trouble.
That's the mother of all
buying tickets.
Yeah, tickets now.
Yeah, that's why they've changed it from the San Diego Comic-Con to Comic-Con International, is at least the rumors I heard on the floor, is because it's a step towards where they're going to move next year.
A little flexibility. Gotcha. Yeah. Interesting. Well, they need it because the problem was is there were some major panels that I wanted to go to that was an hour and a half to 2 hour wait. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you couldn't even get in after that.
Yeah, and I felt like in a lot of ways this was the fallout from E3, is that there were a lot of people here who felt like they hadn't been able to get their geek on at E3.
Maybe.
And we're here.
And every year it's just gotten more and more popular. It's just been on an upward slope.
I remember that.
Yeah.
The years that we've been there, every year there were more and more and more and more and more,
I mean,
and more people.
People who remember how it was back in the day, apparently it was all about comics. How strange.
And it's very I think film-oriented. Yeah, I think comics is probably down to about 40% or less.
Well, I remember reading an article, I don't know if it's still true, that this was about a year ago, saying that in the comic book industry, the only thing in the comic book industry that is not profitable are the comics. Like, all the merchandising, all the movies, all the TV, everything
when
else.
When they collect the comics into books, that's apparently where they... Like, the issues, apparently, are total losing profit.
Oh, so when they have, like, the book collection, the graphic novel version.
Oh, absolutely. Exactly. Like, I can't wait to read Joss Whedon's Buffy Season 8.
Oh, yeah, but you're not getting an issue.
I'm not getting it issue by issue. Well, no way in hell.
I could lend them to you, of course.
I'm getting it issue by issue. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I got the impression they had slightly less conference rooms this time. That they were actually, because they can make them bigger, they were actually making them bigger for their big things and having less of the smaller ones this year.
Huh.
Now, I don't know if that's true, but that was an impression I got because they knew they had so many people coming in.
If that's true, that would make me sad because one of the things I did really like about going there was I went to a couple, like, you know, discussions by the golden age writers of comic books.
Yeah.
And you'd walk in and there were like three incredibly old guys standing at the podium and three people in the audience.
And I think they were reacting to that this year. And, you know, they knew that everybody wanted to go see, for example, Supernatural.
Bradbury. Yeah.
You know, I mean, the Supernatural panel was packed. I have no idea
really?
Why.
Dude, it
was Supernatural panel was packed.
That's such
the Heroes panel was
demon
packed.
Show.
The
Battlestar.
Battlestar
packed.
Was ridiculous.
They were all packed.
Yeah. Yeah. Iron Man, forget about it. I mean, forget about it. That was there was no way of getting in there.
I feel like we only got to see the Joss panel because we had an in.
Yeah, we snuck in the back door with him. Yeah. But yeah, that was another disaster. So I was like, come on, you got to be kidding me. I mean, the problem is if you actually want to go to a couple of those, that's the only thing you can do all day. You go to two.
Yeah.
And that's a problem for me if I'm paying that much money to go to that place. I should be able to wait 20 minutes in line max and then get in and then, you know, maybe hold those things twice or something. I don't know. But anyway. Well,
let's talk about what the floor looked like. This year, they had a couple interesting things that I saw. They had a life-size Jabba the Hutt. I think that's been there before.
Yeah, that has
But they also had the polar bear from the Golden Compass.
Oh, yeah.
Who was this huge, like, story-tall polar bear that you could get your picture taken under. And, you know, by the way, again, Golden Compass looks fantastic.
They also had the...
I love the trailers for that. I love them.
Hope It Doesn't Suck.
Love the books. Hope It Doesn't Suck.
I hope...
Or, like the other books? You like the you like the Subtle Knife and stuff like that?
I have the Subtle Knife the best.
I have to borrow the second book from you. Yeah. I haven't read it yet.
I like the first book, and then that's it. I'm done.
Oh, really? After the first book, it starts to get metaphysical. Spiritual.
Uh-oh.
You were going to say something?
They had the Iron Man suits at the... Marvel booth.
They did. For Dawn, if you want to see some pictures, we'll for you.
We'll try to post these this time on our website. I've got some Comic-Con things, too. They had a lot of the same stuff, I did notice.
They have things from years past, you know, Lord of the Rings and, you know, stuff like that. But the stuff that's the coolest is the stuff that's coming out soon.
I didn't spend very much time on the floor, but there were two things that really sort of were my defining moments of being on the floor. One was the girl, the booth babe that they had for the Quentin Tarantino booth.
Oh, yep, from Grindhouse.
Oh, yeah. Grindhouse.
Was an actual amputee.
Real amputee
with a gun mounted on her leg.
We have a picture of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy.
And wandering around and bumping into that, you're like, whoa.
Yeah. A couple of the geeklings at the party, basically, and thank you guys for coming, were like, I thought she was hot. So
she was teeny.
She was tiny. Yeah, she
teeny,
was.
Teeny, tiny.
Now, they also had, because of Pirates of the Caribbean, there are an awful lot of pirates roaming around, just like there have been to the last couple of conferences. But there's a new thing. They have 300 dudes.
Yeah.
They've got these dudes.
Oh, yeah, the Spartans were afoot.
Walking around in loincloths, you know, with it all hanging out.
I was like, finally.
It all hanging out.
Just, you know.
Yeah, it wasn't just chainmail bikinis.
Well, hold on. Were these Comic-Con Spartans, or were
these professionally hired Spartans?
These
were like actor Spartans.
Well, there were some Comic-Con guys that looked pretty good, but there were some also ones that shouldn't have been
exactly.
in
there.
If you could see...
Like, if I showed up in a Speedo and claimed to be a Spartan, would I have been fitting in with this crowd or no?
No. Different.
Okay.
But look at the little sparkle in Lisa's eye, the little giggle going on.
It's about time. Listen, I've had to deal with booth babes for years.
And that'll explain just about everything you need to know.
Yeah, the problem I had with the Spartans is that they all look like... like bad porn stars. I mean, they were really in shape, but like with the booth babes, they're pretty and they're in shape. These guys were like really in shape, and they looked like they had fallen out of the ugly tree and hit every stick on the way down.
But they're like, they were like a bunch of personal trainers in loincloths, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I don't know, that like that one guy who stood up and at the 300 panel and asked, he was a good looking guy, and like he looked like he kind of been in
a
movie.
A Spartan asked a question.
A Spartan asked a question at the 300 panel.
Oh, I went to the Balls of Fury panel, and one of the Leias asked a question.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle of them asking, you know, talking to the really funny guys from Balls of Fury, they go, Hang on. Charlie, could you pull out the shot, please? And so they put this poor, cute little girl wearing her Leia bikini. They pull out into a wide shot, so you can see she's wearing veritably nothing.
Right.
And she just absolutely turns beet red all the way to her shoulder.
Well, you know, you're going to wear the
damn... You're going to wear the costume. Exactly. You got to be ready.
You're going to wear it. Own it, baby. Own it.
All right, so we're going to talk about things on the floor first?
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about what we saw in terms of, like, the, you know, the people walking around and stuff. I saw it now... Aaron, I saw something that I hope you saw because you would really like it. The Blade Runner babes.
I did see some of the Blade Runner costumes.
Sponsored, weren't they?
Yeah,
they were sponsored.
Yeah, they were sponsored.
Well, there's the new Blade Runner release coming
out. New Blade Runner.
Right. We'll talk about that. We went to the panel. We'll talk about that later. But they did send some actors in costume around, and they look pretty good.
And they had the trucks running around outside of Comic-Con.
That what?
The trucks running around outside of Comic-Con.
Blade Runner trucks.
Oh, you're right. With the ads from Blade Runner.
Yeah, like they looked right out of the movie. Yeah, that was fantastic.
On big old screens. Just remember the giant screens in Blade Runner? So these trucks driving by that had the big screens.
Advertising
on.
Gum and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
That's cool.
So that was definitely in full force. I'm trying to think of what other just kind of what... It was... The floor on Saturday was just unbelievably packed. I mean, you just could not move through the damn room. It was crazy.
Shane had a Trenches signing.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, the Trenches video was playing there. They didn't... in some ways, I was a little disappointed because... Basically, they didn't have any sound on for the trailer. They had the trailer playing, but there was absolutely no sound. And, you know, in Comic-Con, come on, you know, you got to have sound. The sound is what catches your attention, you know.
I saw the Trenches poster, though, just walking around on my own.
Yeah, they saw them handing out the Trenches poster. Yeah. So
I went over to the guy who makes all of the models and like that for Blizzard and for a series of other things, and he actually had the Illidan figurine out on the table.
Oh yeah,
and he was talking to this other guy about it, and I went over and I was looking at it, and I was just sort of smiling myself, and they started talking about the voice, and I started laughing. One of the guys turned to me and goes, "What?" And I go, "Well, I was the voice." And the other guy turns to me and he goes, "Oh my God! Oh my God! Wait, it's you!" And I guess he saw my face on YouTube on one of these YouTube things, and he freaked out. And I was like, "Yeah!" And he started following me around the Comic-Con.
Oh God! Oops. It's baby's first stalker.
Yeah, to be like, okay, yeah, thanks, thanks very much.
He's outside your apartment right now, naked with the jar of Crisco.
Yeah, exactly.
Saw the StarCon 2 trailer, or not? Wait,
StarCraft 2 trailer. Yeah, it's a great, it's a beautiful thing.
It's about high hairy time.
It doesn't show anything though.
It's just an animatic.
They have just since then. They have, you know,
BlizzCon.
They've been showing a lot more, and
well, that was playable at BlizzCon.
Yes, and
so.
Is there a release date?
No, it'll be next year.
But you know what they showed was so close. I feel like it was like
you can polish up really quickly if you're just showing it.
Yeah,
oh, they're doing a playable. You said so.
Yeah,
no, it's playable.
The coolest thing is they showed when you're not actually on the field. Instead of pulling back, remember the screen where it just gave you all the data for the mission.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of that, you are a character on a ship, a spaceship that goes through the galaxy that's in orbit around these planets. And there's other characters on the ship, and there's a whole story mode where you walk around and talk to people and get story.
That's awesome.
I know, because I That's love awesome. The story.
I'm Starcraft. All into that. Me That's too. Great.
Yeah, I think it won't be out until maybe fall or winter of next year, because it's not about just polishing up the game. If they don't get the balance right, there's an entire country that will literally fall apart.
Korea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if they don't get that shit down, they are going to come unglued.
And they're taking a big risk, because I thought, oh, if it ain't broke, you shouldn't do much. But from what I've seen, they are introducing all these new units that can do all these new things. Mm-hmm. Like,
well,
like
they
Marine
better.
Can transform and fly. And so I feel like the balance has to be done again. And it was, I think it took a lot of time for them to do it for the first StarCraft.
Yeah. It's true. They have the history of it, but I'm curious how many of the it's been so long. I'm curious how many of the original game balance testers are still there.
I know.
For game balance designers.
No, Blizzard runs through people like
all video game companies.
Yeah. They're not good to their people either?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Because you're right, that balance was the game. It was magic, the balance of stuff.
Yeah.
It was chess.
Yeah.
I saw the stuff on the Sarah Connor Chronicles, the video that they had up for the Sarah Connor Chronicles, talking to some of the folks there. I didn't like it. I thought
it's
too bad.
Really mixed things about it.
I thought it looked like poop.
It's
but
too bad because Summer's in it, and apparently
it's too bad because Bear's the composer on it.
Oh, she.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Bear McCreary.
So has he seen a bunch of it?
Bear, I'm sure he has because he composed for it. So
we
find
out what he thinks.
He has to compose blind.
Yeah,
let him see.
Yeah,
show.
He's not
the thing with the Bionic Woman. Didn't I thought that looked like poop too?
Really, so. I like the teasers.
That got mixed reviews. They actually showed the pilot there, and we know we didn't go because I think that was when the Joss Whedon thing was going on. I think, but there was mixed reviews on the pilot. So I don't know. Whatever.
Usually, mixed reviews means that the fan base will carry it. So
yeah.
Or, I don't know, mixed reviews can also mean that it's just a departure from the original and the fan base is resenting that. You know?
Like Battlestar.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'll talk about some specific things we saw on the floor. One thing is HeroClix has a Halo line coming out.
They still make those?
That's fun.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they've got Alien vs. Predator out now.
My
they have
God.
The HorrorClix. They've got all sorts of stuff.
I haven't seen that in years.
So, Halo. They have a whole line of Halo. They have 80 miniatures that are coming out in September with the HeroClix stuff, They unveiled. Remember we saw the Scarab?
Oh, yeah, the huge.
You know the big giant walker in Halo 2? The giant Scarab?
You can jump on it and fight on top.
Yeah, it's a 2 foot by, well, it's a 2.5 by 2.5 foot model that's a HeroClix.
Wow.
Is it on like a pentagon or an octagon?
No, it's actually, I think it has its, each leg has its own little like dial or something.
I love it when they do, they made a Cthulhu HeroClix last year that was something like 2 feet tall.
But
that was very
it's
impressive.
Like, that, you can't play with that. Like, what are you going to do? Push that a 3
it's something to own. They make like 30 of them. And
yeah,
then,
well, it's a $200 game piece, but you can play with it, I guess, if you would like to, but it seems a little pointless.
I just think that's hilarious.
Some of the models look pretty cool. They've got vehicles. They've got individual characters and all that. The HeroClix game system is just not great. That's the problem. So,
It didn't catch me.
So anyway, that comes out in September, right when Halo 3 comes out. So look for that.
Woohoo! I was walking around, and I heard, read a book, read a book, read a motherfucking book. And
great. Now Flash Gordon's going to write us another nasty letter.
So
good job.
BET. I went over to the BET booth. BET is breaking into animation.
Right.
So they've got two new projects coming out. They got Hannibal the Conqueror in March 2008 with Vin Diesel. And then they have something called Bufu by Orlando Jones. And they're the people that did Read a Book. And Read a Book is a song by Bumani Arma. It's a hysterical song. And there's a video that they've done with it, that Bufu has done, that's really great. We were all just giggling hysterically as we were watching it earlier today.
Still stuck on it.
The song will stick in your head. It's very repetitive, but it's a lot of fun. I'm going to put a link on the site for that.
Hilarious.
I saw a little group. They're called the Sci-Fi Heroes. Sci-FiHeroes.net is where you can find their internet presence. But they are just a group of fans who build props and costumes from different shows. So they have like Sci-Fi Heroes dot Firefly or Sci-Fi Heroes dot Battlestar, you know. And these guys just post on how they've come up with their different costumes and props to make them look like the originals. And they had a lot of cool stuff there, and they seem pretty enthusiastic. So anyway, if you want to find out how to build a pulse rifle from Aliens, head on over there, because they'll help you do that.
There were a couple things. One was I tried to interview Lou Ferrigno, who is down on the floor signing his Hulk stuff. And he basically said, come back at 6, you know, because I'm busy right now. And I tried to come back at 6, and he was gone.
I was like, that's why I wanted you to come back at 6.
The Hulk stood you up.
Thanks, Lou. So, really, appreciate it.
Yeah, he was getting swarmed there.
To pay to take a picture with him.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And for autographs, it was like a whole money-making enterprise.
That's what all those... I mean, my sister goes to those things all the time. Oh, I mean, they have to travel and all this stuff. It's like,
I think partially it depends on the people, too. It depends on the actors, how they react to the fans. Like, I was dragged to a Xena convention once upon a time.
Dragged, and right.
My ass.
Shut up. Don't judge me.
You were dragged.
And what costume were you wearing at the Xena? Was it perhaps a leather bustier with thigh-high boots?
And I could kill in those things. Believe me. I've got the legs for them. But, like, the woman who played Gabrielle, the lead sidekick, was there.
Yes.
And she was very kind of sullen and reluctant to be there. It was not... You could tell she was just not into meeting the fans. Mm-hmm. And so she's at one booth signing things, kind of glaring at people as she's signing her name on her headshots. And then one table over is the woman who played Callisto, who is the arch nemesis of Xena in the series, who's, like, draped over the table, fans in either arm, like, you know, posing and laughing and, like, hugging and kissing. And it's just to see the two of them next to each other really kind of hit home how you can either have fun with these things or see them as a money-making venture.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, they're both really seeing them as a money-making venture.
Yeah, I mean, but one's decided to have fun with it, and the other hasn't.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I can see how it could be a little grueling and maybe a little demoralizing if your career is not going well. And you have to go to the, you know, you're going to these things to make some money, and, you know, they just thinking of you as a character that you did freaking 6 years ago. I could see how it could be take toll on the soul, but if that's your job and people are paying money, you got to fake it. It's just like if you're scooping freaking ice cream at Baskin Robbins, put a goddamn smile on your face because I'm paying for the fucking cone.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Same thing.
That was a lot of swearing about ice cream.
I'm just saying.
You're a freaking actor. Act. You know? Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, I understand all that, but you're right. They should, you know, just don't go.
Yeah.
If it's that miserable, don't go.
If you're going to ruin the time of the fans, don't go.
Because they're so happy to see these people.
Yeah, exactly.
Shane and I were walking around, and we saw this really great half-an-hour film that this guy made called Razor Sharp, directed by a guy named Marcus Perry. And it was basically just a half-an-hour movie that he put together with great special effects, a really interesting story. It's basically about a thief breaking into a breaking into this building to steal a code breaker that turns out to be this genius little girl. And it's kind of like the pilot of some sort of, you know, Disney TV show.
Huh.
But it was really well done. I was so impressed. I mean, Shane and I were really impressed by this.
Huh.
You know? And Shane does great special effects. I mean, yeah, that's one of the things that he's, you know, that he's really good at. And he was impressed by this guy's work. So that was really interesting. And, you know, again, be one of our links.
Very cool.
Great.
I want to bring up The King of Kong, the documentary about... You've seen it.
I've seen it.
It's a
great
documentary about the one guy who is the champion Pac-Man player.
Billy Mitchell. Famous.
And he gets challenged by somebody else to play a competition Donkey Kong.
Yeah. Actually, the competition is sort of global on this... there's one site that keeps tabs on, you know, the international top score on all these games. And so Billy Mitchell, of course, had the top score. And so this guy basically was like, I can beat that score. And
right.
You get to see how he tries. And it's really interesting. It gets into sort of the politics of how they track these scores and verify them. And then, of course, there's the brilliant Billy Mitchell, who is all personality.
He is a character.
I'm actually not familiar with him. I've heard the name, but I don't know anything about him.
Well, the trailer is online. There's a website. I'll send you the website. The Seth Gordon is the director, and he's a Group 101 member.
Really?
Yeah. And he got
Small World.
Yep. And so he went off to make this documentary, which is getting all sorts of buzz. The trailer is freaking awesome.
We should get him on here.
I'm gonna call him up and see if he'll come on.
Absolutely loved it. I mean, it's just a really, it's one of those documentaries that really tells a story, so you're on the edge of your seat. It's really well put together, well made.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to try to get him on here. But anyway, you guys should go out and check out the trailer and then rent the movie or buy the movie because it looks really funny.
I saw at the con they had the guy who was the challenger. I can't remember his name. And I was a little starstruck. Oh, my God, there's a guy.
Yeah, that was cool that he had a pretty big booth there. Yeah.
Isn't it funny the people that will starstruck
yeah,
you?
Yeah, it is weird.
Yeah.
The other thing, Margaret Weiss Productions was there with their big collection. I met all the guys there, Jamie and Margaret and a whole bunch of other people. They were there with the Serenity role-playing game. And here, they also, pardon me, they have...
Did you not get Margaret Weiss's autograph?
I did not. I met her, though, Sugar Hand. She's very cool. They also now have the license for the Battlestar Galactica role-playing game.
Right on.
Good for them.
So they gave us here. You guys can have some of these. This is a preview copy. The actual core rule book is not out yet, but it should be out next month. So they have a preview copy that you could have there, and they wanted us to have it. They've now named the system... They've tweaked and now named the system that they used in Serenity, and I think now it's now becoming their kind of role-playing engine for this game and their upcoming franchises, which they won't announce yet.
Did they make the system less clunky?
I haven't read through all this, and I'm kind of looking forward to the core book to get some of the details.
I would just love some additional background because, like, the different stars and stuff. We don't know anything about the different planets.
Well, they say that let's see. Maybe I haven't written it down here, but they say they're going to have detailed information on some of the planets and the ships, and they're going to have a whole ship-to-ship combat system. Ooh. That will allow you to do single combat ships and fleet scale if you want to do large battles with single die rolls.
Fun.
Or whatever. So that's coming out soon. Also, this book, which is a Serenity role-playing edition, it's a supplement. This, reason why I picked this up is the bad guy is my sister.
Oh, awesome!
So they were really they gave a copy to us, and I gave one to my sister. And the artist here who drew these things, of course, they couldn't make it look exactly like my sister because they don't have the rights to the likeness of the actors from the series. So they had to kind of make it, but the lawyers were like, you can't make it too much like it. So anyway, they gave a free copy of the artwork and signed it. The artist signed it, and I gave it to my sister, and my sister thought it was really cool.
That's awesome.
Here's the weird thing is I was sitting there trying to find the artist's name, so I looked at the cover here. They gave me, for some reason, special thanks. I don't know why. Aaron Hendricks and Christina Hendricks and the special thanks. I mean,
you met them when they first put out.
Actually, I've never met them face to face. We've talked to them and we've supported their game and told people to to go check it out and stuff. But and so I thank them for putting me in the as special thanks. But and I hope I can do more to earn the special thanks. I'm not sure what I did. But
also, you should say this supplement's called Out in the Black.
Out in the Black is the supplement, and it's nominated for an Origins Award for best role playing supplement of the year.
Very nice.
So
good on you.
Yeah. So anyway, I haven't read through the whole supplement just because I've been so busy, but it looks interesting and it.
If it's written in the same style that the original source, I enjoyed reading the source book. It was one of those role-playing games that was just put together with style and character. It was good.
Well, this is a, essentially this is a a module, a big module. Yeah. They've got all sorts of background information and card games.
You know, and the Firefly series and, you know, the Serenity, it died too soon. So there just isn't enough source information in the series to...
Well, now you can make it up yourself by playing the role-playing game. Anyway, they are very cool. I met all of them, and they were happy to see a representative of Geeks On. So anyway, hi, guys, if you're listening at all. Oh, also, by the way, Margaret Weiss Productions has a Dragonlance animated movie coming out.
Really?
From the original books?
We've discussed this.
The Dragonlance Dragons of the Autumn Twilight is it's actually one of the a book. So
they had a good voice cast last I checked. Very good voice.
So they had a trailer that they premiered at Comic-Con, but it was on Thursday night, so we were too late, and I can't find it anywhere on the internet, so I'm not sure how it looks or anything.
You guys think you can send us a copy of the trailer? Come on.
Yeah, they should send us a copy of the trailer. Anyway, so that should be out soon, I think.
Cool.
Animated.
What type of animated is it? Do you know? Is it 3D, 2D?
Don't know.
Oh.
I think I heard it was going to be 3D.
Let's see. The it's being produced by Toons Animation, Commotion Pictures, and Epic Level Entertainment.
One of my favorite series as a kid.
Yeah, seriously. Did anybody see any comics they liked while they were looking around?
Did any of you read comics while you were there?
I read a couple, but not really.
I just wanted to point out really quick my my pick of the year last year, Trailer Park of Terror, is being made into a movie.
Really?
So, yeah. So.
Interesting. I saw a couple things that were interesting. One was called Fade from Grace from Image. It's a superhero love story about a superhero and his normal wife from the normal wife's perspective. So, you know,
interesting.
That was interesting. I saw something called Dorothy, which was interesting because it's all real actors done in green screen. They shoot in green screen, then they, you know, they touch it up. So it's all actually photographs, you know, instead of just drawings.
And then they comp in the backgrounds.
But do they paint on top of it too?
They do.
I saw one. I think I might have seen that, and it was beautiful because
it's
like
absolutely
a new
beautiful
form.
It's like comic rotoscope.
Yeah, exactly.
And basically, this is sort of a Wizard of the Oz, as if Wizard of the Oz never happened, and Dorothy is going to Oz and arriving in the 21st century.
Wizard of the Oz?
Wizard of Oz?
Wizard of Oz. Sorry.
That's what my mom would call
it. That's the Oz to you.
Yeah, it's like, that's a lot of pressure to be the Oz, you know?
The Oz? Okay, Wizard of the Oz.
So it's Wizard of Oz.
So it's futuristic, though.
But Oz itself is also futuristic.
Okay.
It's really interesting.
That's cool.
It's very different. It's a darker, like, sort of semi-futuristic magical Oz.
Tangent, have you seen the trailers for Tin Man?
I have not.
No.
It's the new Oz movie that's coming out, and it looks... I was really impressed by the trailer.
Never even heard
really
of it.
Really dark, live action.
Wow.
TV
the new witch,
movie.
Very, very dark looking. Like the new witch was this beautiful. She looked like a Six from Battlestar Galactica, just a little less trampy.
But how dare you?
Whole different idea behind it, and it didn't look like it was about Dorothy
at all.
Well, Dorothy was in it, I'm pretty sure, but it looked like it was more about the Tin Man.
Is it
looked very
it,
interesting?
Is it a TV movie or is it a film movie?
I can't recall any of the details.
It's Sci-Fi
looked,
Channel
it looked,
movie.
No, it looked.
Actually,
it
I got
looked,
excited about Flash Gordon. I was like, oh, it's on.
It looked. It looked very main studio release.
And by the way, did you see the reviews of Flash Gordon?
No,
it got
scathing.
Panned.
Really?
They had there was like 20 different reviews, and they were just not kind at all.
You know,
a friend
sci-fi
of mine is producing it. I really wanted it to be good.
Sci-Fi Channel, it's just so disappointing. The things that they actually have real control over, they do such a bad job with. I mean, Battlestar, for people who don't know, while the Sci-Fi Channel owns half of it, BBC owns the other half, so they don't really actually have that much control over it. You know, they
well, they don't have as it's not a direct production of them.
Exactly.
Yeah, they just buy
every bad episode is actually a Sci-Fi production, and every good episode is a BBC.
No, but
I get what you're saying, though. I'm very disappointed with the things they have control. Like Invisible Man was consistent. Like, why is this still on? It just kept going and going. It wouldn't die.
What was the...
They just have bad writers on almost everything they do.
Well, yeah, and you know, you have to assume that if they have bad writers, they also probably have producers who don't really know what they're doing either, you know? So it's just unfortunate because I really... I love the concept of the Sci-Fi Channel. I love what they could potentially do, but so much of their stuff is consistently B.
I also... Yeah.
We're
I
the audience. Often,
I wonder very often if the people producing and writing are sci-fi lovers.
I'm sure
they're
are.
Just people who wanted a job.
I'm sure that they're sci-fi lovers.
I think they are, and I think they're overly enthusiastic.
Do you think so? Because sometimes I just see them rehashing the same plot.
Hey, you can be a sci-fi lover and just not be very talented. I mean, it's hard to paint a great painting every time you sit in front of a canvas. It's hard to make great work.
Yeah, but we're not talking about one person. We're talking about consistent products.
Right, and if you don't have the money to pay for good work,
the A teams,
you get the B teams.
Yeah, the bad part, though, is Sci-Fi Channel, like, we're all part of this now, are getting a bad reputation. I mean, other than Battlestar, when you say the word, oh, it's a Sci-Fi Channel show, what do you think?
I mean, look at the people that they, that science that Battlestar hired to start up that show, and you look at the people they hired to start up Flash Gordon, you would be like, what are you, nuts?
By the way, I met someone who was a writer on the sci-fi show, and she was...
What sci-fi show?
On Battlestar, I mean.
Uh-huh.
And she was like, she'd never written sci-fi before. She was just someone who was a good writer that they hired.
Right.
You know, she happened to be a great writer.
See,
they hired
her. But Ron Moore...
That's fine. I'm fine with that.
But Ron Moore...
Was very talented.
Was very talented, and everybody knew it. And then someone hired him to restart that thing. When they hired... I can't even remember the guy with the stuff the guy did who's heading... Flash Gordon, but the shows he worked on were all crap.
Really?
Yeah. So guess what? Surprise! Surprise! You hire Roger Corman, you get a Roger Corman movie.
Yeah.
It's like,
all
you know.
All I know is that when I saw that trailer, it made me want to watch the original movie again.
You mean the 80s movie?
Because they had the Queen.
Flash.
Yeah, they had the Queen in the trailer. And I was
you
like,
saved
oh.
every one of us.
That's awesome.
All right.
There's one other comic I saw, and I'm going to have to apologize because I did not write down the name. I had the comics. And I left them at home.
Dope.
But they were great. And
thank you.
I will link to them. I'm going to tell you what they're about. I'll link to them on the site.
Hold on. Just the name of the comic series is, and we'll edit in later on in post-production.
No, we won't.
But basically, the concept of it is it's about a post-apocalyptic future, okay, where there's zombies and stuff running around. And it's about two redneck bounty hunters in this post-apocalyptic future.
What? English is just not our strong suit today.
Not today.
No.
But it's about two redneck bounty hunters, and it's hysterical. It's really funny, you know, writing.
Love me my zombie genre.
It's got stuff where, like, in the beginning of one of the comics, they go and they assassinate a zombie, and they come back and tell the wife of the zombie, basically, of who the guy used to be, you know, we've killed him, so now you can join him in heaven. And she goes, okay, well, let me give you my life savings, which is like four cans of beans. You know, it's like, you know, they're running around killing people for like a can of beans. You know,
it's like road warrior type
killing
stuff.
Zombies.
Yeah, you know, and there's another part where like they're driving around and all of a sudden frogs start falling out of the air and hitting the windshield, and one of the guys goes, frogs are falling out of the air again. He goes, yeah, must be Wednesday. God, I hate Wednesdays. You know, it's like
bizarre.
It's just a funny comic. It's really well written.
Huh. Any other floor? Things we see on the floor?
You want to talk about the video games that I saw on the floor?
Oh.
Because they
limited amount.
Some.
Sony
yeah, not
was there.
Much. It was no E3, but, you know. But the ones I saw, yeah, a lot of Sony. They had for the PS3 Heavenly Sword and Ratchet and Clank. And I played a little of the Heavenly Sword, and it is totally God of War. I mean, there's no masking it, but it was beautiful. And my favorite thing is the splashes of blood. That, like when you cut people, that is beautiful. All right.
Well, they also had that cool, like before you get to the kind of arena battle, you slide down these ropes. They have like a little mini game where you're jumping from rope to rope as they're cutting the ropes. And
it's cool, but you know what's funny is that almost that exact same thing is in Ratchet and Clank. Like the same, you know, that was
mechanic.
Right next to it. Yeah, they had thing where they're blasting holes and you're like riding on a rail and you have to jump when it's
blasted.
Yeah,
weird.
Really weird. And the one other game I saw for the PSP, which looked great, was Silent Hill Origins.
Ooh.
Which is a prequel. I guess they're going to come out with a Silent Hill 5, but for the PSP only, Silent Hill Origins. And I played a little of that. And the best part of it is that it's exactly like Silent Hill 1, because, you know, the power of the PSP is exactly PlayStation 1 about. Yeah. So it looks like it and has the same controls, same sound, everything about it. And it was kind of scary, and I was like, oh, I'm getting scared on a tiny portable platform.
Might be actually worth charging my PlayStation Portable battery again. Yeah. Dust it and pull it out of the closet.
Yeah, it looks really good. Carol and I were both really excited about it because we're fans.
Awesome.
Let's hit some of the actual
panels. Perfect.
The first panel that I saw was the Ridley Scott panel.
The Ridley Scott / 300 panel, right?
I did not see any of the 300.
Okay, let's start with the Ridley Scott then.
Yeah, the Ridley Scott. Well, first of all, James Hong is a funny motherfucker.
He was hilarious.
Yeah.
In everything that I saw him in Balls of Fury and everything, he was unbelievably funny.
Like, every word that came out of his mouth, I was laughing. I don't even know why.
He was playing kind of the desperate actor, I still need a job bit, you know, which was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But they had Ridley Scott was there, several of the actors, a couple of the production designers.
Why didn't you charge the stage? I thought you were going to, like, throw your clothes at him.
I did. But that was backstage.
Wow.
No, it was a cool panel. The problem I have, they always have a part in these panels where the audience can come up and ask questions. And
they always ask the stupidest questions.
These people are idiots. They're, it was such a waste of the panel. And I kind of...
Like, what would they ask?
I can't even remember them. They're just such. They're such idiotic questions. Now,
well, there was.
Would
one,
you give
like,
me a hug?
Well, oh, no. I remember that.
No, but there was one like some literally. I think it was it Ridley had talked about what was going to be released and what his new films were and stuff like that. And then they cut to the next guy who was in line, and the guy goes, "So are you going to release anything new next?"
Yeah,
and like it was like
we just told you, but. Yeah. The panels that are best is when the guy running the panel asks a couple of his own questions that are good and then allows some, you know. This, unfortunately, was all audience questions, I thought, and it was pretty lame.
Especially when they have a lot of people on the panel, you feel like you don't really, you know, nobody's directing their question
to the production designer.
Right?
They're yeah, and it was really a waste. So. But anyway, they did talk about the new DVD release that is coming out this Christmas. Mm-hmm. 5-disc set.
Aaron will be first in line.
That has...
It's a Christmas present. Hint, hint.
Yes. It's going to be like $100. It's got four different versions of the movie, including the newest version, which Ridley Scott's decided to, you know...
He went in and did a CGI edit, you know, and cleaned up a lot of things. And
yeah, like,
and
everyone carrying walkie-talkies now has shotguns, and Han shoots
yeah,
first.
But they said they weren't redoing any of the special effects.
No, but he was cleaning it up. Like, the snake replicant, that lady.
Right.
Like, when she crashes through the glass...
Oh.
She used to be a man.
Yeah.
Yeah, which you could tell.
Yeah.
It was horrible.
But now it's actually Joanna Cassidy.
Now it's actually
right, so they actually did a reshoot and redid the stunt with the actress going through the glass, and they replaced the shot so that she looks like herself when she does the stunt, which is good because it was literally a dude. It looked like a dude in a... in a wig crashing through there. It was just not good.
Which is what it was.
Yeah, and they showed us that clip, so we got to see the changes. It was really exciting.
The musical soundtrack will be released, finally, for Blade Runner as well.
Has that never been released?
It has never been released.
I have a
Well, wait. I mean, did they say that they really were going to get the
yes.
soundtrack?
Yeah, oh, they said it was going to be released.
Oh, okay.
EMI, I think he said it was going to be released on. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Well, we have... No. I mean... Vangelis is a little dated now.
Oh, that soundtrack is it's freaking great. Awesome.
Really?
I mean,
yes. I don't remember.
So, like, brings to mind the movie. Like, they're so interrelated. They're so bound together in my mind.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I mean, I love the movie, but
no, it's unbelievable. It's
okay.
Great.
All right.
I still listen to it. I have it loaded up. I have one, someone gave me, one of our listeners, Maybe I shouldn't say that. There's somebody out there who gave me a hat, one of the
altered.
Fake cop. People have collected the soundtrack through various means for years and years and years, and it's now been collected in a unofficial soundtrack called the Esper Edition. And so I got that, and it's still amazing. I listen to it all the time.
Yeah, you'd think it would be more dated, considering it's Vangelis in the 80s. But yeah. It's really, I think it's one of the things that makes it a classic, because it's okay. Kind of timeless.
I thought Sean Young was sort of that derisive actress who wasn't really into Comic-Con when she was there. What'd you think of her? I thought Sean Young was really, like, over it.
I think she's nuts, though.
She obviously intentionally dressed up the part, though.
She
had
did.
The same red lipstick and the same hair.
She totally did.
Like, okay.
And we saw her at that party
the
next night, and she was still kind of doing that whole bit.
She was hitting on Lonnie, or she was hitting on somebody.
I think it was Lonnie.
Has she done anything since that National Lampoon movie she was in?
No.
National Lampoon? Well, she did Ace Ventura.
No, she was in a National Lampoon movie after that.
Oh.
National Lampoon's Devil Target or something like that.
I don't know.
One of the National Lampoon movies that we have not tracked.
Oh. It's a forgettable one.
That category of things.
Anyway, it was a pretty good panel. Unfortunately, not a lot of good questions, but we did learn a lot about the DVD, including a 3.5 hour documentary that's going to be on the disc that looks very interesting.
All right. So, hit the 300. What'd you say?
The 300 was also a very interesting panel. They had a couple of the actors. The director was there. They talked about the upcoming, which has now been released, the DVD, HD DVD, and Blu-ray. The HDVD I have. Lisa got it for me because I couldn't find it. And it's got all sorts of cool stuff, one of which is the entire movie, picture in picture, with the blue screen only, with none of the special effects. You can watch side by side, and he talks you through the whole thing. So you can see
how they did it.
Wait, this is available now, or was it
available now?
Which Aaron would
in my
love
living room
would be very useful, I think.
Oh yeah. Oh, I'm going to study that thing because I'm doing a project like that.
Really cool is when all of a sudden in the blue screen there's a shot that is the same, and you realize it's because it's 100% CG. So you get to see these wide shots were 100% CG. All the actors were CG.
Okay.
So it's really kind of cool.
Very cool, and it's got a game that you can play on the HD DVD. You can make your own edits and upload it. It's pretty crazy. But the director also talked about Watchmen a little bit.
Oh yes.
Ooh.
Now we were driving up when this panel actually happened, but everybody out there, you can download it on Xbox Live, the entire Warner Brothers panel, which had the entire Watchmen portion of it.
Yeah.
And this was probably the one panel I wish I could have been there for, because I, of course, like you all, probably had a million questions of how are they going to pull it off? Is it going to be, surreal or realistic? And he answered all those questions to my satisfaction.
And there is some casting now.
Yeah.
We have Patrick Wilson will play Night Owl.
Who is from Little Children.
Oh, I really like him. He's really good.
He's too young, but apparently they're going to age him up and down for
he's
the flashbacks.
He's too pretty for Night Owl,
That's
too.
That's what I thought. He's supposed to be, punchy
and
old.
Yeah, he's supposed to be punchy and...
Yeah, that is bizarre.
That's a weird casting.
Zach addressed that and said that they're going to age him up, but for flashbacks he could be young.
Yeah, okay.
Jackie Earle Haley will play Rorschach, who is... He's the guy who was the... pedophile in the last, where he got nominated for Academy Award
Little Children.
I see that.
He was in Breaking Away. He was a child actor.
He was the child actor in Breaking Away. He's awesome.
Okay. Well,
at least he was a child actor.
Awesome.
Billy Crudup will be playing Dr. Manhattan.
Is Billy Crudup.
Crudup?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know who he is.
Free Dr. Manhattan.
So he will be digital?
Dr. Manhattan is going to be 100% CG, thank God.
Yeah, because that wouldn't work.
That's cool.
You just dip them in blue?
Yeah,
No.
Billy Crudup was in... what was
it? He's been in a lot of things.
Point of No Return. He was in... little kid goes out on the road with Rolling Stone magazine.
Almost Famous?
Almost Famous. He was the lead. He was the handsome lead guitarist. Yeah.
He's a guy who's kind of been on the edge of being a huge star for a long time. He's never quite made it.
I keep hearing his name, but I don't know
But he's very well respected, especially for theater acting. He's won a couple of awards for theater acting.
Who else?
Yeah, he just won for the...
Jeffrey Dean Morgan will play the comedian.
Apparently he's on Supernatural and Grey's Anatomy. And he was worried about just seeing his picture, but my sister watches Supernatural. Carolyn's totally outed. And she would never want to admit this, but
we now know the
truth.
You know,
it's a guilty pleasure. What are you going to do? She says that she can buy that he will be grizzled enough. I think he needs to be big and bulky.
Yeah, it sounds like they're casting kind of pretty.
Which guy is he in Supernatural? Is he one of the leads? Is he the father?
I actually don't know.
All the actors that he's named so far sound like they'd be great for the flashbacks, but not so good for the later events.
That's exactly what I... When I first heard it,
eat some ice cream.
Go on. I'm sorry.
I don't know of any other ones.
There's one new one that was just announced, which is, I don't know how to pronounce her name, but Carla Cugina. You know, she was in Sin City. She's on Entourage. She was...
Was she in Sin City?
I can't remember. Anyway, okay. She is going to play the Silk Spectre, you know, the mother. And I think that's perfect casting. I think she's great. Hmm. Although, again, in the book, she's much older. But what are you going
to
do?
Well, yeah. Easier to get you older than younger.
Yeah.
So if they need the flashbacks, you have to cast younger and then go up. So.
Oh, and the one other really interesting question he answered at the panel was, and I'm sure you are curious if they're going to include the pirate story. Because figure if you're a studio executive, you would want to cut that out. But yeah, apparently it's in the script, so we'll see.
Interesting.
I know, a lot of people, it's very controversial.
Cut it.
Easy to cut.
It'll get cut in the edit.
I bet.
There was also some Star Trek announcements at Comic-Con for the new J.J. Abrams upcoming feature film.
What did you think about this?
Well, Zachary Quinto.
Aaron's given up.
Zachary Quinto, who's the guy from Heroes, he was the bad guy in Heroes.
Tyler?
He's going to play Spock, young Spock.
I can see that. Out of anyone that's out there right now, who would you cast?
I cast the guy who played Brutus on Rome.
He'd be good too, you're right.
He was dead on.
Yeah, but that's actually even a better choice, you're right. Yeah.
Did you guys see that guy, Siler, at that DC party we went to?
You went to DC party?
No.
Oh, no, was he at Siler? No, I didn't see him.
He was there, and it's funny, when you see him in person, you can't help but be a little scared of him.
Just because you're going to fall into his eyebrows?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, oh, there's Siler. Ah.
We'll talk about the parties after we go through some of the panels, because we went to a couple parties that were cool. And then, actually, there's another person who was just announced, Anton Yelchin, who was in the film Alpha Dog. He's going to be playing Chekhov.
That's cool.
Matt Damon?
He's very young.
Very young.
Is it still Matt Damon?
That's always been a rumor and has never been confirmed. Okay. It's just people BSing out. Who knows if it's a real rumor, but that's, you know. But there is a strong rumor that they're trying to get Tom Cruise to play Christopher Pike as a walk-on role. Because they want a big name.
A walk-on.
A big name to play.
He's buddies with J.J.
Yeah, he's buddies with J.J.
But Tom still Cruise's? Wouldn't do a walk-on.
Yeah, they did the last Mission Impossible movie together.
Oh, really?
There was some announcements for Smallville. Because it wasn't really announcements. They had Supergirl was there. Laura Vandervoort. Vandervoort?
Ooh.
I don't know how to say her name. Anyway,
what do you mean, the original Supergirl back in the day?
No. That was season 6 of Smallville is going to introduce Supergirl.
See, I'm always a season behind, so I'm waiting for the new one to come out. I heard it sucked.
Get cable.
I have cable.
Well, watch damn television.
I don't have time.
Do you have TiVo?
No.
It's interesting. He doesn't have time to watch it now, but he can watch it a season behind.
Yeah, because I can watch on the weekend.
Get the damn TiVo, the rest
TiVo.
Of the company or country.
TiVo.
Wake up and smell the TiVo.
Everyone I know who has that reaction, why should I get TiVo? Then they get it and they're like, oh my God, how did I live without this?
I watch so much less TV now that I can only watch the stuff I want to see.
Plus, you don't have to watch commercials. You can fly through it.
All right, it's not a TiVo commercial. Anyway, she's hot. Still won't save the show, but she's hot. That's all you need to know.
All right. Since everybody knows, I am a big fan of the Jim Henson Company. I went to the Jim Henson panel.
Oh, you did get to go.
They have some fantastic stuff. It was Brian Henson, Lisa Henson, Hale Stanford, Craig Bartlett, and John Chandler. They are coming out with a bunch of really interesting things.
And if Dark Crystal isn't in this list.
Dark Crystal is in the list. They showed a little bit of a preview of it.
Oh.
It was looking cool. But that's not
not what the major things were. Oh. The major things are something called the Scrumps.
Okay.
The Scrumps is going to be the first CGI that is actually puppeted in real time.
And it was amazing. They did it.
You mean they have a digital puppetry? You mean
they have somebody managing the head of the puppet?
Right, they can manage all the features
and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And somebody else is managing the body, and they can move through three-dimensional space in real time.
Oh, that's cool. It was unbelievable
how well it worked out.
It's funny because that was supposed to revolutionize video gaming about 2 years ago. I've seen it.
Yeah, they did Call of Duty 3 with video puppetry, right?
Yeah.
And what's going to be interesting is that this technology, it's basically, I'm not sure about the concept of the Scrumps. It's a sort of very strange alien band. we'll see whether or not it works, but
the technology was really cool. Mm-hmm. Basically, they did a demo, which is what you were seeing there, where they had people in the gear and you could see them moving in the gear, and up on the screen, you'd see the character moving and talking and dancing, and you know, it would mimic everything they did on the floor.
See, the thing about it is it's not great CGI yet. Mm-hmm. So I don't know the fact that it's in real time.
Like, who cares?
Who cares?
No one cares.
By the time it's rendered out to a TV, nobody gives a crap. Yeah. So unless they're going to be utilizing it in a way that's in real time, I don't see what they're talking about.
Yeah.
So
one of the doesn't make sense to
potential me advantages is if they could get something with a great storyline that was a day, you know, everyday episode, you know, they'd be able to put out episodes very quickly.
Right. Well, what they were saying was that it would allow actors and actresses to improv within a scene and create improvisational roles, which is interesting.
That's very smart.
Other things that they're coming out with something called Tinseltown, and they showed a bunch of clips from it. Tinseltown is bloody hilarious. It is one of the most funny things I've ever seen. It's primarily improv. The two main characters are a gay couple. They are a pig and a ram. There you go. And the pig is an alcoholic and a bit of a drunk, and the ram is very upstraight, and he's always kind of taking care of his lover and everything like that. But they actually filmed...
It's like the gay odd couple. Okay.
And they sort of filmed a scene where they actually went to In-N-Out Burger and ordered food. And it was like after
live?
A party, and one of them was drunk, and he
this
was like,
awesome.
It was hilarious and all improv and great. It
what
was just
venue
really
is this
great.
Going to be shown through?
HBO or Cinemax, I think what they're going to
really?
Try to do. Yeah.
Hmm.
The other thing was that they did, there's a new thing called Puppet Up and Uncensored, which is going to be a new improv show here in Los Angeles that is going to be going up once a month with a lot of the major Muppeteers.
They talked about this last year.
Yeah. And they're actually going to start it. It's going to start on the 17th of August.
Oh, okay.
And then the 25th of the month, every month after that. And they
Well, it looks like we're missing your wedding.
Yeah. They brought in Ben Browder to do it, and they literally did it like an improv show. Like send in a name from out of the audience of a profession, and they did a ninja applying for a job, except everything was all puppets, and they filmed it so half of the action that was being filmed was exactly
above
what you would see above, and then what you would see all the puppeteers working below, and that was just as funny.
Yeah. You know, if you mentioned that Ben Browder was at the opening of this, you might actually get Kat to put off the wedding for a little while and
go. Actually, true. Maybe.
Just saying,
but definitely, it's going to be fantastic.
Did anybody get into the Iron Man?
Nope.
Well,
nope.
I happen to have seen. I pieced together the entire thing using the internet, including I found the trailer that has been taken off everywhere.
Oh, really?
So I did see the trailer. So they had a special Comic-Con trailer of Iron Man, and then they had the panel. The panel was really cool. The actors were all really funny and everything.
How'd it look, the trailer?
It looks pretty freaking good, actually.
Awesome.
It seems funny and
it's
well-written.
Iron Man is not like one of those superheroes I'm really attracted to. It doesn't really excite me in any way, but it looked good. The trailer I saw looked really good.
As a movie, I think it could be fantastic, and Robert Downey Jr. is one of my favorite actors.
He is really, in the little clips that I saw, he is so strange such a strange character that it just looks amazing. Like,
yeah.
Like, I kind of wished I saw less of the actual Iron Man in the suit and more of Tony Stark.
Well, I heard a rumor that he's a real fan of the character. Like, he wanted this role because he likes Iron Man.
Well,
I don't know if it's true or not.
I don't really know much about Iron Man and Tony Stark, but this version seemed
He's got a lot in common with Tony Stark. We'll just leave it at that.
He seems like a kind of like a messed up arms dealer.
Yeah. Billionaire playboy. Yeah. Arms dealer.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. He took the role. It seems funny. Like, some of the dialogue seemed very funny and very clever. So... And the suits look very cool. They'd have this really awesome flying scene at the end with the kind of new improved suit. He kind of goes from this big, bulky tank, gray tank thing that he can barely move in. It's got flamethrowers attached. And he kind of like upgrades his suit, it looks like. And then he gets into the super sleek thing where he can fly and he's got jets on his palms and everything. It looks pretty cool.
Repulsor beams, Aaron. Repulsor beams.
Well, whatever. Anyway, I'm actually looking forward to the movie now.
Me too. It's good. And Jon Favreau directing, I think that is why it will have more comedy than you might expect. And he's actually good with visual effects. I saw Zathura, and it was well made.
Yeah. I mean, it's... Actually, a lot of the stuff in the trailer was all practical. The only thing at the end was this flying scene, and that was the only thing that was CG. Mm-hmm. Because they didn't have any of the special effects done. They just cut a clip reel, and it was still pretty amazing.
Well, I hope it's like Zathura, where Jon Favreau was all about the practical. He was really smart about
it. Well, this looks pretty interesting. You know, the Speed Racer, they're making a movie, and there's cast announcements. Matthew Fox will be playing Racer X.
I'm so mad about all of this.
Neil Hirsch, is that his name? He's playing Speed.
Speedy. White guy.
Well, what is
all
Speed?
Supposed to be white.
No! He's Japanese!
What's his name?
I don't know. It's
Speed.
Speedy!
Okay.
Susan Sarandon is playing his mom. John Goodman's in it. A couple other people.
Anyway. Hold on, let me just try on that sentence for size. Susan Sarandon starring in Speed Racer. Moving on.
Moving on.
Oh, like she was in fucking Rocky Horror Picture Show, okay?
It's been a while.
She's not all that.
She was young. She needed the money.
Moving on. I went to the Rogue and Focus Studios panel and saw Neil Gaiman and Henry Selig talk about Coraline and a lot of wonderful things. Just... you can start seeing the trailers for Coraline. It's coming out. Neil Gaiman is suddenly going from being a small fanboy, everybody loves him, but nobody really knows who he is, to this next year, he's going to be huge.
Let's just mention
a ton of things coming out.
Stardust just opened this weekend.
Stardust,
78% on Rotten Tomatoes.
When are we going?
Good.
Yeah. Really? Because it looks like hell.
I think the trailers look great. I think they look fantastic.
78% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Terrible.
Oh, wow.
It was one of those things that could be either wretched or good, but just the part they show in the trailer, we were thinking it wishes it were Princess
when
Bride.
When we going?
Yeah, I thought Michelle Pfeiffer looked fantastic. I thought Robert De Niro looked bad.
Yeah.
The other thing, Balls of Fury, Dan Fogelman, Carl Wolfstag, playing Carl Wolfstag and stuff like that. It was unbelievably funny. If the movie is half as funny as the panel was,
it will be
utterly, utterly brilliant. They said, go to this movie, and this is our pitch, because it will be very aggressively stupid. I'm in. Right. I mean, I'm absolutely in.
I think they're going to
deliver. What was the movie, by the way, that we saw the panel for with all the gun?
Oh, Shoot 'em Up.
Oh, Shoot 'em Up. Did you see
the line panel? Clive Owen.
This is one of those movies that could... This is kind of one of those snakes on the plane type of movies where you could be very fun to go see once. It's literally a gunfight from frame one to the end of the movie where no one runs out of bullets. Like, we saw this clip where Clive Owen is has to save this pregnant woman from these guys who are chasing after her, like 50 guys chasing after her with guns.
It's over the top.
She then delivers a baby while he's between her legs, blasting away at all these bad guys. The baby pops out. He pushes her down, shoots the umbilical cord with the gun. And then it's this giant chase scene with him holding the baby, sliding around. I mean, literally 100 guys die in the first 5 minutes of the movie. Oh, it's like
it's outrageous.
It's so outrageous. God. You're just like...
Oh, and Paul Giamatti is the bad guy.
Yeah, Paul Giamatti.
How do you love that?
I'm so there.
But the story I heard was that they were thinking about casting Paul Giamatti, and they said, and everyone said, you know, there's no way he'll ever do it. And the guy goes... Let me just ask. I bet he would love to do something like this. He gets asked to do all this, like, fancy schmancy crap. I bet he would love to be a villain in something like this. And he was like, yeah!
Yeah, he actually looks really good as a villain. I'm just a little worried that it's just going to be just total... It's just going to go too much and just be kind of lame.
Did you ever see The Killer by John Woo? There's no such thing as too much.
Yeah.
Actually, I wasn't a big fan of The Killer, actually.
I liked Killer.
Killer's awesome.
I preferred Hard Boiled.
I mean, this is definitely a send-up. Where
he shoots pregnant people.
Yeah.
Well, I think he was intentionally sort of spoofing Hard Boiled because he's carrying a baby through
the movie. Yeah. Through the whole movie, he's carrying this stupid baby and getting in gunfights.
Saw The Strangers, Liv Tyler, Scott Speedman. Actually interviewed Liv Tyler. She wouldn't let me put her on audio.
Oh, really?
Talked to her for about 7 minutes. She was really wonderful, really nice. And
what is The Strangers?
The Strangers is going to be... it's actually... I bet you they're going to delay it because of this new murder in Connecticut. I don't know if you've heard about it.
No.
The Strangers is about a woman caught in her house when three strangers come in and try and rape and kill her.
Oh, wow.
And that is just what happened in Connecticut last weekend with, a man was followed home and his wife and everything like that. His wife and 11-year-old daughter were raped, and it was hideous.
And
it's literally, like, it lines up completely with the story.
They need to just, unfortunately, they'll just probably only need to postpone it for a month and everyone will forget.
Yeah.
But, you know.
And then I also saw the spotlight on J. Michael Straczynski, who is wonderful. There is a new Babylon 5 miniseries coming out.
Own it.
Right.
Which is going to be really cool.
Wait. New miniseries? We're not talking the movie that just came out?
No. New thing, I believe. I believe it's a new Babylon... please don't quote me. But I believe that... Because what I have here is new Babylon 5 series.
It's written on this notebook.
Yeah, so I'm assuming that's what...
We'll check up on that.
Don't tease me, man. Tease me. I know where you live.
He's also releasing Changeling this year.
Yeah.
It is now going to be directed by Clint Eastwood, produced by Ron Howard, and starring Angelina Jolie.
Crazy. It could go either way. No, that's pretty good.
But Changeling was...
It's his script.
Right.
It's his script that he did years ago, and that it's his original script.
Yeah.
There are a few things that I just love that he said. He said, because they were asking him about things for Babylon 5 and Warner Brothers, and he said this: the ways of Warner Brothers are likened to God. They confound the mind.
Did he give any news on Rising Stars?
No. Nothing on Rising Stars at all. Let's see. A few other things. He's doing... World War Z with Brad Pitt as well.
Yeah, I think I heard that.
And he's getting that going. And that's about it, other than a few questions that I had for him that I needed to ask.
We saw the Joss Whedon panel, which is most of the stuff has unfortunately leaked on the internet as announcements, but I think it was a casual conversation with the audience. There's a made-for-TV movie for BBC called Ripper, which is a Buffy spinoff.
Yeah, it's a Giles spinoff.
See, I thought they did that years ago, and we were waiting for it.
It's been in the works for years.
Oh, see, I thought
years.
That's why Giles left the show for a little while.
Oh, no. He lives in England. He had to, go back home.
Oh.
Yeah.
So that's out there. But that's the only real big... Like, there's comic book announcements. He's doing Buffy season 8?
9.
Yeah, currently 8 is...
9's in the works,
though.
9's
in the works.
Okay. And then he has just smaller projects, but there's no really announcements, really.
No, his next big project will probably be Goners, which is his first original, full-length feature.
Right.
Is very exciting, and he's working on it now. He's doing rewrites.
Right. And then...
And we could probably segue from there into our parties.
Well, let me just mention, we saw Pushing Daisies. We saw the panel, which you're working on here coming up.
I hear the editing is phenomenal.
But we saw the pilot, and the pilot is great. So it's going to be on ABC, which surprises the hell out of me because it just doesn't seem like an ABC show.
It looks like a cable show, if anything.
It's really...
Do you think the networks are finally catching on that they have to be a little smarter, do a little better in order to keep an audience?
Well, yeah, if their strategy here is try something completely different, then...
Yeah, I'm not saying that's going to get an audience. I'm just saying it's good.
Isn't that what killed Wonder Falls, though?
Yes, it is. But Wonder Falls, you know, had many things working against it. It was on Friday night. You know, this one will be Wednesday at 8, so it's a little better. But, Don, I think you would really like it.
Oh,
it's
a great... Wait. I'm so excited.
It's like Amelie meets some type of weird dark death... script.
He's a little obsessed with death. I mean, I'm fine with that, but there's a lot of subjects out there.
Production company is called Living Dead Guy, and if you see his logo at the end of Wonder Falls, it's a gravestone and a hand coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say so. Anyway, go see that.
I saw a really funny panel that I'd love to mention. Censorship in animation. And if you think that censorship is bad in regular stuff, when it comes to animation, it's insane because these are things that kids are watching and parents are watching.
Mm-hmm.
So this one guy talked about you can't say heck or darn. He couldn't say I beseech thee because it was taking the Lord's name in vain, they told him. And he's like, but that just doesn't...
Not.
He's like, I just wasn't going to fight with him. He couldn't use furnace, vacation, envy, or remove because these words they thought were too complex for kids. You can't be impactful with
violence.
Wait.
But that's not censorship as in...
That's stupidity is that's what
just,
that is.
They just said...
You can blow shit up.
They said you have to remove the word remove because kids won't understand what remove means.
Okay, got it.
That's so weird.
And remove?
Yes. Kids won't understand what remove means.
I
mean, and they actually just did a study with Baby Einstein. They found out that children who have been working on Baby Einstein, Baby Mozart, all of these TV programs, like adults have been shoving their kids in front of...
Are worse off.
They have a 6% vocabulary drop from children who were not shown Baby Mozart, Baby Einstein.
All right, keep going, Peter.
On one channel, they had prohibitions against kids being in any type of enclosed spaces, anything a kid could get trapped in. So at one point, they couldn't let these kids be in a refrigerator box.
Right.
He said, why not? Well, kids can get trapped in refrigerators. Happens all the time. He goes, no, this is a box. They said, but it's a refrigerator box. He said, no, it's just a box. It doesn't say refrigerator on or anything. They said, no, you can't do it. Okay, they couldn't put a kid in a snow globe because kids might somehow, you know,
get trapped in a snow globe.
I mean, you know,
I hate when that happens.
Yeah, you know,
happened to me once.
No goth characters were allowed in animation after Columbine. No cracked or crumbling buildings after 9/11.
Well, they snuck one back in now.
Well,
the goths are back.
This was right after Columbine. Okay. We're talking about now. Some of the stupidest notes they ever got. Okay.
Oh, dear.
There was a Smurfs episode. I don't know if you ever remember where Smurfette finds these mole people.
I've never really seen
them. And she tries to... They can't see, so she tries to shave away the hair on their faces so that they can see, because it won't block their eyes. They don't actually have any eyes. They said, we object to the mole people because we think that they are going to offend blind viewers.
Blind viewers.
Blind viewers. This will offend our blind viewers. On The Simpsons, it's okay to moon people, but we can only show one cheek at a time. Can't show two cheeks. There was another one where they said there were these kids walking down this alley, and they were passing some dumpsters. And they said, please make sure the dumpster lids are closed so that no cartoon kids can fall into them after they've left the alley.
Oh, God.
So these are real notes they got. Now, there was one positive story. There was a guy there who worked on Batman and Superman. And, you know, when they do these animated stuff, they always have to show, you know, like, say, a car gets blown up and people flying off the bridge.
Out.
You have to see the people, like, swim back up from the water. So
A-team violence.
They're not allowed to show any actual real...
G.I. Joe.
Cobra. They were always parachutes.
Right. Okay.
Oh, really?
So, anyway, they had this idea for something called the late Clark Kent. And basically, it's this idea where the serial killer kills Clark Kent. We think he thinks he does. Mm-hmm. And at the end, the guy... gets caught by Superman. He's put into the gas chamber. And what they wanted was this moment where he realizes he's Superman and then the gas comes out. and he dies. So it's like this guy, this great twist. The guy finally realizes that Clark Kent and Superman are the same person, but it's too late. So it's this great twist.
Just put a parachute on them.
Exactly. Well, they were lucky because they had a mandate that they could really try and push boundaries with their shows. So they worked with the guy who was, you know, who typically is the person that says no, and they tried to figure out a way to do it. And they figured, okay, we need to make it abstract enough that kids won't understand it, but that adults will get it. So basically, it's a guy sitting in this chamber, and he goes, "He's Superman," and then you just cut to a hand pulling a switch, and it goes to black.
Ah.
And I thought that was just genius. You know, it doesn't always have to be this stupid crap. But anyway, so I just thought that some of this stuff was hysterical. You know,
that is funny.
One guy had to go through 47 people who gave notes on each show.
Oh,
because of this type of stuff.
Wow. So should we just talk quickly about some of the parties and stuff we went to?
Let's breeze on through them real quick.
We went out with Joss Whedon, and you didn't. Yeah.
We did a lot of partying.
It's on now with 50% more dick.
We went out and drinking and chillaxing and partying all through Comic-Con. In fact, the first night we didn't get home until 4. The second night we didn't get back to like 2 or so. And then anyway, so that was all good. I like drinking with you all.
That was actually pretty hysterical. I didn't know that was Joss for most of the night. I had no idea. Hanging out, having a great time. There's this guy who's going out dancing. It's like Matt and this guy that are like totally like,
yeah, we're like
boogieing down.
We're totally boogieing down.
You know, and then we're walking along, and all of a sudden these guys mob Joss, and it's like, oh, that's Joss? Oh, that's cool. All right. That makes sense.
Fortunately for us, Joss is, I don't know if he was assistant or a guy he works with, trying to find all these parties and stuff. So this guy was like working his ass off.
Well, the best thing, we just
tagged along.
Going to Comic-Con with Joss, like, I know he's popular, but at Comic-Con, it's like he's God's.
Yeah, exactly.
He can go to any party he wants to, and so exactly, I felt like we were like his hangers-on.
Yeah, so we hung out.
We got dragged to another party. The second night we were at, my sister and I went to the sci-fi party with him. Well, you know.
We were in the entourage.
Yeah, so the first night we went to the DC party.
Right.
Which was really cool. A lot of cool people.
I met Ron Moore there.
I met Ron Moore, too.
Wow,
we talked. Lisa and I just went up and talked to Ron Moore, the creator of Battlestar Galactica, and just chit-chatted with him.
Nice.
Actually, I kind of know what he's working on now, but I think... I don't think I can mention that.
Oh, really?
Hush, hush.
Yeah, I think that was just kind of chit-chat conversation, not it's going to end up on the internet conversation. But that was cool. Who is your friend who wrote, like... who's the guy who wrote Road to Perdition and all that?
David Sell.
Oh, he seemed like a really cool guy.
Awesome. First of all, a brilliant writer. I worked on a pilot with him called Beyond. That was hard sci-fi. Like, I wish you guys could have seen it.
Like NASA sci-fi?
It was all about JPL, like straight-up JPL, like solving problems with rockets, you know, the kind of thing that I like. But anyway, so he's a brilliant writer, and he's working on a million projects, but... you might know that God of War, he's writing the movie God of War.
Ooh.
Which, yeah.
Very cool.
Really exciting.
Yeah, so we've met all sorts of cool people. There are a couple of production designers for Blade Runner was there. A couple of the actors from Blade Runner was there. And there was all sorts of cool people. Some of the heroes people.
Mm-hmm.
And then you, the next night, went to the Sci-Fi Channel party.
It was like Sci-Fi Entertainment Weekly party. I feel like we were so lucky to get in. But, yeah, everybody was there. Like Robert Downey, John Favreau. My personal best sighting was Ed Norton.
the Hulk.
Yeah, but I missed the panel. But
oh, he's the Hulk now. He's the new Hulk.
Yeah, and apparently
we couldn't get into the panel.
Good choice.
Apparently, he's writing it too.
Is that a good thing?
He's a good writer. He's a good writer.
Okay.
He had a hand in American History X, from what I heard.
Okay.
And the Battlestar Galactica, Katie Sackhoff was there, who Joss got to meet, and he was really thrilled because he's a huge BFG fan. So that was a great moment.
Lisa wouldn't watch the damn show, Battlestar Galactica. I begged her.
I was in the same boat as you.
Yeah, but I begged you, and I even got you the damn first season.
Yep.
And then Joss calls up and goes, "Hey, you should watch Battlestar Galactica." And then she starts watching it.
Yeah, that's exactly.
That's
how
just
it
rude.
Thanks, Lisa.
Rude.
It was like critical mass, and it just had to reach a point.
He was the breaking point. You said.
No, everybody had been told.
Oh, okay.
When Joss Whedon says watch BSG, everyone watches BSG.
Exactly. Then one night, of course, we had our meet and greet, which we got to meet a whole bunch of people. Almost 20 people showed up meet us, and we got to meet all these listeners, and they got to meet each other. Very cool. It was like having like just friends show up. Yeah. Like, you know, it's like...
I got to take a couple of our geeklings out to lunch, and it was fun. It was really
cool. Oh, good.
Apart from that. And one of them pointed out all of my inconsistencies that I've said over 3.5 years. You said this about Garrett Wong then, and then you said this later.
We never inconsistent. Oops. We our opinions are static.
You went I went out to lunch with on our forums, Daddio. He had a film that was shown, a short film that was shown at Comic-Con, and a panel, and I joined him on the panel, and it was really, really cool. People loved his film, so we went out to lunch, and Matt went out to lunch with a couple of people.
I've only had a chance to talk with him once or twice, but the guy is really interesting. He's just,
who, Daddio?
Yeah,
he's a good filmmaker too.
Like
so. Anyway, thanks everybody for showing up. And it was great to meet. I met people on the floor. It was just good to see everybody. And
thanks for all the wedding advice.
Yeah. I was amazed. I mean, it just exploded in terms of the number of people that showed up this time. Yeah. Last time it was like 3. This time it's like 20.
Yeah.
Next time it's going to be insane.
It's going to be
and
23.
Thank you for all the kind emails from those who attended and sent me emails chewing me out for not being there. I promise I'll try next year. I promise.
So anyway, I can't wait for next year, especially if they have it at Vegas.
Oh my!
That will be awesome.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Because I'd rather be in Vegas than San Diego when it comes to conventions.
As soon as they make the announcement, we have to make reservations at the hotel.
Yes.
As soon as it comes.
Because I want to be stumbling distance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. As soon.
Stumbling distance.
Because Vegas, circus, you know, circus.
There's so much public transportation in Vegas, and it's still a pain in the ass to get around there.
Yeah. That's true. All right, everybody.
One quick message.
Oh, okay.
A quick congratulations to Mayhem Mechanics, our first geekling to become a grandpa on our forums.
Aww.
So congratulations, sir. Just wanted to send you a send out.
Grand geek.
Excellent. All right, well, I hope everybody has a good geek week. And I'll see some of you next time at Comic-Con.
See you when I'm married.
Bye.
You got it.
Geek it out.